It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this 16th day of February 2021. February is mercifully more than half over. I'm terribly happy to announce. I realized that yesterday I passed another, I'm not sure how many days it is now, anniversary of being a non-smoker, but I did, and I am. I'm very happy about that. Hi, I'm Robin, and it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn, and we've got Titanic stuff to consider. If you'd like to augment your listening pleasure during the 3 hours in which this program is live, feel free to run on over to headon.live and click on chat room. Pop right in, and as long as you're not a right-wing troll or something like that, you won't be bounced out. You'll be welcomed, in fact, by Squeaky and Stockton Larry, the early arrivers, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, while he is a third-stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space today there in Northern California to become Man Cave. And I think, that, well, I don't know how cold it is there, but I wouldn't be out in a man cave here either. I've managed to, Agnes came in a little bit ago and got the heat fired up, and we've got it up to a toasty 46 degrees. Mercifully, I've got my little insulated hoodie going, so it's not like all polyestery, so it doesn't make noise or crinkle or anything during the program. So I should be okay in that regard. We should be okay for this Titanic Tuesday. And well, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So we send out thanks on this 16th day of the month to our 16th day of the month subscribers. And that would be our buddy Zed and Reinhard on the Virginia coast and Brock. And thank you very kindly to Mark. And thank you to different Mark. And thank you to Rusty. Thank you all very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. And that means our fundraising goal for this evening has fallen to 480. 480. Thank you very kindly. So we've got $180 to finish funding yesterday's program and then today's. And then we'll be off and running. This is a tough time for people in a lot of different parts of the country. A tornado ripped through North Carolina last night, and I hope that our friends in North Carolina were not in its path and are safe from it. Of course, then there's the state of Texas. Dear God, I know the inclination is to say that Texas is being ravaged by unseasonably cold weather. But the fact of the matter is, Texas is being ravaged by the usual spate of right-wing Republican conservatism. That's what's freezing Texas right now. That's what's got their grid all fucked up. So, you know, everything is not always as it seems. You know what I mean? I have a feeling Texas would be in a lot better shape if it didn't have a bunch of godforsaken Republicans who don't vote. You know, small government Republicans. We need to have the government so small that it can't regulate no energy industries and can't hardly run no power grid. Well, there it is. Heesh. I was a few seconds late to air because, no, that was not a beer bottle cap. I'll explain that. Because of the propane canister ran out precisely at the moment I was getting ready to hit the start button, so that necessitated a little bit of a delay. No, what you just heard, that wasn't, in fact, a bottle cap. I found a really, and it was apparently on a manager's special and will not be restocked, of course, because I like it, but I was over at Kroger's because I try to shop Union. And I ran across, because I've given up soda. I don't drink pop at all. Pretty much just water or, you know, these essenced seltzers. And on the manager's special, I ran across this stuff called Topo Chico. I do not speak enough Spanish to know what that means. But it is mineral water imported from Mexico. And it, in this case, is flavored with it is the most vibrant, real-tasting flavoring of lime that I've ever experienced, and it's positively wonderful and refreshing. And so I've been enjoying one several nights in a row on the program here, just to, you know, just to stay hydrated and refreshed. And it's very pleasant, very nice. No calories, no high fructose corn syrup, no aspartame, nothing. Just water with a little bit of natural lime flavoring to it, and it's really, really pleasant. And because I'm a sucker for marketing, I like their origin story on their box about how the Mexica princess, daughter of Moctezuma the First, was really thirsty, and they stopped by the spring, and she drank from it and was refreshed. And you know, the funny thing is, they reference Moctezuma the First, but and even though it's the daughter's story, somehow she doesn't get named. But then again, the Mexica people tended to name their daughters things like 12 Rabbit. And that just left it that, and, you know, basically named them after their birthday. Yeah, I know. Nobody cares. Well, thank you. Thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs just looked up and sent me the link to Topo Chico USA. And, of course, now that I'm very, very fond of it, I will never see it again. Because that's the way marketing works in my little corner of the world. Topo Chico, according to Lee in New York, means little mole. Huh. Well, I'll try to overlook that because, you know. Oh, there it is. Yeah. This legend speaks of the virtues of the water that since 1895 has given its name to one of the most important drinks in all of Mexico, Topo Chico mineral water. There was a beautiful Aztec princess who had no name, who suffered a terrible disease, a disease so strange that no doctors of her father, Moctezuma the First, Iluicamina, successor in 1440 of the king Itzcoatl, had been able to cure. Desperate, the king turned to the older priests in the kingdom to find a cure for his beautiful daughter. My God, it's turning into the Walter Cronkite voice, isn't it? They told him that according to the timeless stories of travelers, in a faraway northern land, there were strange and hidden waters which flowed at high temperatures, waters in which one only needed to bathe in or to drink from to regain vigor, joy, strength, and refreshment. Encouraged by this news, Moctezuma the First, and by the way, this was not Moctezuma the Second. Moctezuma the Second was the disaster in waiting who happened to be there when Cortez showed up. No, no. This was during the glory days of the Triple Alliance. What could some of the first order an immediate expedition to take his daughter to this amazing place? His daughter, who still doesn't have a name. I bet she has a name. They just can't be bothered to tell it. After traveling long and rugged roads, the princess and her expedition reached a fertile valley flanked by mountains. To the east, they saw a mountain with the form of a woman's face, now Serra de la Silla, and a mole-shaped hill from whose slopes flowed the prodigal waters? Prodigal? Really? Prodigious, maybe? Prodigal? After spending some time there, taking baths and drinking from the water, I hope she was bathing in a place different from where she was drinking, but that's me, the daughter of Motocutsoma I, his priests and chiefs, and she still doesn't have a name, returned to the Anahuac lands, optimistic, strong, happy, and refreshed. The news about the princess's recovery spread throughout the kingdom and has passed from generation to generation up until modern times, but somehow they didn't pass along the princess's freaking name. Because, you know, princess. Ugh. Okay, so it may the word mole in English may not mean, you know, little blind rat-like creature. It may mean, well, there's another meaning of mole. If Flavio's listening, I'm sure we will get a discursive explanation, and I'm eager for it. Oh, dear. Well, that's worrisome. Vanny the Food Babe was reporting people were having allergic reactions to it due to a pollutant. Well, thanks, Randy Radar. And so far, I'm not itching or scratching or swelling up. But, of course, it makes perfect sense. Hey, send it to West Virginia. Robin will drink it. She'll drink anything. Yeah, right. Still seems pretty good to me. So, I'm getting ahead of myself. As far as Texas is concerned, Lee in New York says, they'd be fine if they had coal-fired heating. Oh, dear God, that's actually going around. I had a brief chat with our friend Kenda in Missouri Stan last night, talking about how the talking point is going all around among the folks who, you know, walk on their knuckles and mouth breathe and pick their teeth with their toenail clippings. But if only we was burning more coal, we wouldn't be so cold. This, of course, is a delightful piece of right-wing myth-making and, well, stupidity. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, coal was pretty much driven by, from the market, not by the actions of activists or people who are funded by the sale of a canvas messenger bag, just like the one that John Muir, the racist, carried into Hetch Hetchy to become America's first environmentalists. And you can have one, too, for the low donation price of $15. And only yours will be made by some little child chained to a table in a sweatshop in China. No. Coal has been reduced in its influence in the United States by the rise of toxic frack gas. And the poor little right-wingers in Texas and elsewhere, like the one Kenda told me about in Missouri, they don't seem to understand that there is more potential energy in frack gas than there is in coal. Coal is, in fact, one of the least effective and least useful in terms of BTU content fossil fuels there is. Hell, coal may release less thermal energy than burning water buffalo patties or right. Because that's something else we clever primates have learned to burn for heat. But nonetheless, you know, facts don't bother white wingers. And so they're grunting and they're hooting as they sit there freezing about how if only we were burning more coal, God, if only we was blowing up more mountains in Appalachia and killing more hillbillies, we'd be warm as toast right now. We would. Yeah. Yeah, damn it. Well, stupidity. It's a thing. Meanwhile, Titanic Tuesday. Robin! Just like Darlene in Connecticut stated last night upon her call to the program, I don't know where to begin, so I guess we can start with Robin requesting a pun from the story about former Connecticut House Representative of 1798, Roger Griswold's caning former Vermont House Representative Matthew Lyon. Jeffrey, of course, filibusters the conversation. Yes, I wanted to suggest we do a pun about the Griswold's congressional vacation. That's not nearly as good as working up one about the Lyon. You know, Lyon Matthew, huh? The Lion King? Right. However, as it turns out, Representative Matthew Lyon along with Bernie Sanders in 1774 founded the state of Vermont, and Lyon was considered the vermin of Vermont as he was actually thrown in jail for violating the Sedition Act after accusing John Adams of having unbounded thirst for ridiculous pomp. John Adams was fond of the Sedition Act. And Jeffrey, doing something that's rather of a challenge for a giraffe, jumps in, accusing Adams of unbounded thirst for ridiculous pomp. Are you kidding me? You mean to tell me John Adams was tweeting from the White House 30 times a day and telling endless ridiculous falsehoods from the campaign podium? Now, I don't think these people had any clue what unbounded thirst for ridiculous pomp was all about because, well, you know, because Matthew Lyon, yes, Matthew Lyon, never watched The Fox. Ay, ay, ay. Well, as it turns out, Matthew Lyon was reelected from jail, a la Eugene Debs, who also ran a campaign from jail, and Lyons went on to be the first House representative to represent two states as he would move to Kentucky later in life. And Jeffrey bounds back into the conversation, bounding giraffes. That's something you want to see if you ever get the chance. So there, Robin. Joey just, wait for it. I think Joey just lionized former Vermont and Kentucky House Representative Matthew Lyon. Stacey Plaskett and Joe Neguse were lights out with no and no witnesses were needed as those two laid out the case thoroughly and completely against Nitwit Nero. A Plaskett, by the way, is a prominent lunar impact crater that is located on the northern hemisphere on the far side of the moon. Jeffrey, of course, moonlighting as an astronomer. Joe brought the negus, a strong drink, to the hearing, and Stacey Plaskett just cratered the Republicans, and Donald Trump, with her amazing presentation of the facts, and quelled all the QAnonsense. QAnonsense. That was clever. Hey, beam me up, Giraffe. Good job. Oh, and by the way, the goddess of irony never sleeps, as we well know, and she is wide awake on these two people, as both Stacey Plaskett and Joe Neguse share the same birthday, May the 13th. And speaking of sharing the same birthdays and negus, N-E-G-U-S, strong drink, you mentioned yesterday some of the worst presidents in history as the show was starting, and two of the ones you mentioned, James K. Polk and Warren G. Harding, were both born on my birthday, November 2nd. Yep. James K. Polk was basically interested in taking land from the Mexicans in order to expand the country and expand slavery. He was from Tennessee, you see. Polk managed to acquire New Mexico and California in a costly fight with the Mexicans and their leader, Santa Anna. Jeffrey, with some costly thoughts, James K. Polk did not seem to care about the lives lost or financial cost of the war with Mexico because he was later spotted doing the wait for it. Yes, James K. Polk was later spotted in the White House doing the polka with his wife. And, by the way, having illegally and unnecessarily invaded Mexico, one could say that Moctezuma, see, these things don't just happen around here. Moctezuma II got his revenge because James K. Polk died shitting himself to death. It's a fact. Jeffrey continues, however, Santa Ana continues to get the last laugh as every year his wild winds, yes, the Santa Ana winds, blow and start all kinds of fires all over California. Just ask Tracy and Billable Rick. And, well, Warren G. Harding was just a personable, glad-handing party president, as numerous accounts of the White House mentioned Harding often partying all hours of the night, just playing cards and drinking into the wee hours of the morning with friends and foes from Congress. Ironically, Calvin Coolidge, his vice president, was just the opposite of Harding. Coolidge fit his name as cool, cold person who literally spoke so few words that a woman once bet him that she could get him to say more than two words at a dinner, and the cold, insolent Coolidge simply replied, "You lose." Unlike the two men that Harding and Coolidge ran against in the 1920 election, James Cox, the governor of Ohio, and his vice president, some guy named FDR, Harding and Coolidge were into austerity, and this would, of course, cause the Roaring Twenties to end with a crash and lead to the Depression. Oh, only if the ticket James Cox and FDR had won in 1920. Hey, I don't know. I don't know, Joey. Probably would have ended the same way. However, Harding will be remembered for numerous scandals, with the biggest being when naval oil land reserves were transferred by the Department of Interior into private hands. Appropriately, a man named Fall, Albert Fall, took the fall for that scandal, and it comes down to us through history as the Teapot Dome scandal. And Jeffrey wraps things up. Robin, you asked why Joey and I go to Jalapeno's, a Mexican restaurant, for a Long Island iced tea. Well, if you only tasted one of Elvira's Long Island iced teas, that's something I never do, you would declare them to be scandalous. Not to worry, though, because Elvira's drinks are wonderful, but there is no Long Island tea or pot dome scandal at Jalapeno's, just good people and a great mixologist, namely Elvira. Long Island iced teas just give me the horrors. It's basically every white liquor under the sun with a little blast of Coca-Cola and I think some sour mix. And you know, many a night has been ruined on Long Island iced teas. This has been Joey's Journal for Titanic Tuesday, the 16th day of February 2021, with Giraffe teeing up a Plaskett for President campaign. Yes. Lee in New York, back to the coal thing for just a minute. The Enterprise, Lee says, runs on coal. There's a Star Trek blooper to that effect. Steve in New York says, I'm surprised these fuckers are just a frog's hair away from calling for the actual burning of hillbillies. Well, you know, I wouldn't whisper that into the, you know, you can dry us out and we'll burn for a long time. And then you can take some hillbillies who've had a belly full of shine and we'll burn hot and bright, too, just not quite as long. Well, yeah. What do you want? Not exactly a world-beaten educational system in Texas. Yeah, I know. Billable Rick says, stop telling us how bad Long Island iced teas are. I like them. Well, good for you. I wouldn't. The only association I have with a Long Island iced tea is that daughter number one was conceived, and Agnes has told this story many times. Daughter number one was conceived on Long Island iced teas. I was not involved in that. But, yeah, that's the reality. Joey Ralps wants to know, is your bartender Elvira related to the Elvira? That would be ironic indeed. And apparently, according to Consumer Reports, the things I get started on this program, for God's sakes, Randy Radar points out that Topo Chico, according to Consumer Reports, has cut PFAS levels by more than half in new tests. But it still had levels of PFAS above a cutoff recommended by science and advocates. And how's about that? Lots of talk about an Aztec princess, but not very much talk about how Coca-Cola owns them. Yo, for pity's sakes. This story going back to February 12th, 2021. It's getting worse! Last fall, Consumer Reports tested 47 bottled water products for various contaminants, including PFAS or per and polyfluoroalkyl substances, a chemical class that includes approximately 5,000 substances that have been linked to learning delays in children and, oh, great, cancer. Well, we'll finish this one off and never buy it again. I got a feeling. I should know better. I should know better than to think that I've run across something fun and pleasant and enjoyable at the grocery store because, well, some days it doesn't pay to get out of bed. But nonetheless, it is Titanic Tuesday. And we do have, we've got a fundraising goal of $480. And the thing that I wanted to open the program with today is a moment that surprised even me. I mean, this really did. It did kind of blew my mind. I mean, after as many years of doing this as we're doing it, I try not to be surprised anymore. But sometimes I still am. And so I got up this morning and I saw a breaking news story from the Washington Post by Spencer Sue. Now, by way of background, you know that we talk quite often about the fact that if you really want to be ahead of the curve, if you really want to be talking about, thinking about, pondering things, that other folks haven't quite gotten to yet, you want to come to the Horn. You know, you want to come to this program. Because as we've noted on a number of occasions, this program is so far ahead of the curve, it's like being on Straight Road. And there have been lots of examples of that, but this one just really, right in the forehead. So yesterday we were talking about, because I wanted to make sure that I got it into the Phil Robster, we were talking about the fact that in the among all of Nitwit Nero's potential legal nightmares, E. Jean Carroll, criminal charges potentially in Georgia, potential criminal charges in New York, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, Lindbergh baby kidnapping. I mean, I'd be up for charging him with that, wouldn't you? No, that would be frivolous. We can't do that. We're not like them. But I pointed out that there was an argument to be made that that he has civil liability for the damages that arose out of the attack on the Capitol of January the 6th, 2021. And we talked about who could bring it. I talked about I mentioned the Civil Division of the Department of Justice. But lo and behold, today, headline, House Homeland Security Chairman sues Trump and Giuliani, accusing them of inciting Capitol riot. Representative Benny Thompson, Democrat of Mississippi, alleged in federal court in Washington that Trump's and Giuliani's false claims that the election was stolen fomented a raid that violated, oh, this is too good. And this was the part where I went, oh, my, 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 the goddess is at work. In his suit papers, Representative Thompson accused Giuliani and Trump of violating the 1871 Ku Klux Klan Act. Everybody who knew that there was an 1871 Ku Klux Klan Act, raise your hand. I imagine a few hands went up. It was the legislation that was requested by and President Ulysses S. Grant, passed by the Congress and signed into the law, which he then used to take down to the home of American sedition, namely South Carolina Stan, and kick the living shit out of Klansmen who were in a state of rebellion. Richly deserved. But it's still on the books. And so in the suit papers filed by Representative Thompson, which by now may have been joined by other members of the committee, they say that Trump, Giuliani, members of the Oath Keepers, and the Proud Boys sought to harass and impede lawmakers and temporarily succeeded, thereby forcing Representative Thompson and his colleagues to put on gas masks and to then shelter in place in the House gallery floor, and then were evacuated to the Longworth House office building, where they and 200 other members of the House and their staff and relatives sheltered in place there, hoping that the bloodthirsty, homicidal, maniacal mob whipped up by Nitwit Nero and Giuliani, as alleged, and the Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters and the Proud Boys and the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters staff, but they're not named parties to the suit. But it's a heck of a thing. And so he was sued, Nitwit Nero was, and this is kind of important, he was sued in his personal capacity. He was not sued for an official act, because it is one of the more noxious aspects of our enduring law relating to the President of the United States, that he is immune from suit for official acts. If he had declared that he wanted an attack on the Capitol as an official act, as crazy as it may seem, he'd be immune from suit for that. Yeah. But who knew that the Proud Boys were an LLC, but they are. So Proud Boys International LLC has been sued. And the founder of the Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, has been sued. And because he's not particularly bright, the only one who said anything in the wake of this was the head of the Proud Boys, Enrique Tarrio, who, you might remember, didn't get to go to the January 6th insurrection because he had been arrested in advance because numbnuts tried to take a gun and a shit ton of ammunition into Washington, D.C. And he actually, because apparently he hasn't sufficiently lawyered up yet, he answered the phone when the Washington Post called. And to the Washington Post, he said, "Were there Proud Boys that went in? Yes, and they're idiots. They shouldn't have gone in, but I'm going to support them because they are my brothers. But there was no plan to go into the Capitol." At least none that anybody told you about, Enrique, seeing how you'd been outed as a fucking stool pigeon. You know, federal informant and all of that. "Unfortunately, one of my guys broke a window." One of his guys. How about that? He just he just accepted liability. Oh, dear. "Others trespassed, but there was no plan to even interrupt Congress." Mm-hmm. As I said, others are expected to join in. Those would be Hank Johnson in Georgia, chairman of House Judiciary, Subcommittee on Courts, and Representative Bonnie Watson Coleman, a Democrat of New Jersey, who's chair of the Homeland Security Subcommittee on Transportation. And the entire suit is being prosecuted by the NAACP and a law firm by the name of Cohen, Milstein, Sellers, and Toll. NAACP President Derek Johnson said, Donald Trump has tried to destroy the nation, and we will not let him get away with it. And so it'll be curious to see if the Klan Act can be used for this purpose. Now, we know, of course, that the pettifoggers for Nitwit Nero in the recently concluded impeachment trial said that, well, of course you can't use the 14th Amendment's disqualification language. Everybody knows that was just about the Civil War. The only problem is the 14th Amendment was drafted by people who were intimately familiar with the recently concluded unpleasantness and who could have, if they had so desired, referred specifically to the Civil War, but those people who drafted and ratified the 14th Amendment, they recognized one thing above all others. Namely, and to wit, if it can happen once, it can happen again. And in point of fact, it did happen again, and that's why the Klan Act was passed, and that's why Grant had to send the army down to kick the ever-loving shit out of some racist, miserable, treasonous South Carolinians. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to wait and see how it plays out. But I was astonished, because it felt like we had sort of anticipated it here in our little community that, you know, exists on the last dry rotted thread of a frayed shoestring. How about that? Lawyer Sellers, Joseph M. Sellers, said that whether Trump conspired with others to seek to prevent Congress from completing the ratification of the electoral process and inciting a riot to take over the capitalism was a means to that end. This lawsuit's very simple. It relies on this protection, which every member of Congress is entitled to, that they be free of threats of violence and intimidation, and free that day to certify results of the election of President Biden and Vice President Harris. File more. God, I do. I sincerely hope that everyone harmed by that thing, that miserable attack, that shitty act of sedition, sues Donald Trump. Let him deal with that for the rest of his natural born days. And they will all be sufficiently different that hopefully they will not all be folded together in some sort of massive singular tort claim. It'll be interesting to follow the progress of this, and eventually when it gets up to those nine Solons in Washington with a majority of, you know, six legal scholars who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings, it'll be interesting to see how they handle this. Mm-hmm. It certainly will. But we started out talking about briefly, and this fits within the scope and ambit of Titanic Tuesday. This human-made disaster, and I'm not talking about the weather, even though that's kind of that way too. This human-made disaster in Texas. But now we have to back up, because apparently the subject of the evening is now Long Island iced teas. And Joey answering Ralph's question, No, Elvira is of no relation to the Elvira or to Santa Ana, for that matter. But yes, more Long Island iced tea talk. Flavio says Long Island iced teas and wristband night because kids were dying from alcohol poisoning in Madison, Wisconsin a few years ago, if my memory serves me, under Mayor Cheslowitz. They banned Long Island iced teas and wristband night, all you can drink with a wristband purchase at bars. Flavio adds, Long Island iced teas are gross. On the other hand, Brother Deacon Asa, are you kidding me? Long Island iced tea is a great drink. It goes especially well with a medium rare giraffe burger. How? Sincerely, Brother Deacon Asa, a.k.a. Genghis Khan. That was cold. Well, I guess you'd serve it piping hot with grill marks. Mm-hmm. Or maybe spots. I don't know. God. So now that's out of the way. As for the lawsuit, Steve in New York says, I never intended to break into Congress. I never intended to kill Officer Sicknick when I bludgeoned him to death with a fire extinguisher. I didn't know a fire extinguisher could do that. Intent counts for nothing in tort. All liability is based upon fault. And that really goes back a long way. It goes back to a case, I think, King's Bench or something, back in merry old England. Two of the King's archers, and the King's archers had become rather important in the days after things like battles like Crecy and Agincourt. Agincourt in particular, when the archers of Henry V slaughtered the best and brightest of the French nobility who insisted on running out on their horses ahead of the infantry and got themselves mired up real good, and the English archers just pincushioned the fuck out of them. We few, we happy few. Yeah. But back in the day, a couple of the king's archers, no, maybe it wasn't the king's, maybe it was the king's swordsman. It was somebody. And they had something sharp and nasty, and one of them grievously injured another. And the other complained that his sword arm was now useless. And it was that case, way, 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 way back, that established the, you know, because the guy who slashed his fellow soldier said, "Well, gee, Kingy, I didn't mean to slash the fuck out of his arm. It ain't my fault." And the king said, "Oh, but there's the problem. You may not have intended to, but it certainly was your fault. The dear Lord Jesus did not come down from the sky, take your sword out of your hand, and slash your mate. You did that, and you're liable." And so consequently, we have to this day the old legal maxim that all liability is based upon fault. And later on, things like strict liability and tort developed, but that's a thing for another day. But yeah, I never intended to kill Officer Sicknick. Well, we're really not concerned about that because this isn't a criminal trial. This is a civil one, Sunshine. And well, we're going to enter judgment against you and Donald Trump and Giuliani and the Oath Keeper and the Proud Boys. And remember that the who was it? The Southern Poverty Law Center that took down that really obnoxious Randall Terry. Remember Randall Terry? He went around grunting and hooting about the precious, precious, poor little fetuses. And he tried to intimidate women going into the clinic for things like pap smears and mammograms. Didn't really care. You know, they're all whores. And that was all good, all well and good, until somebody sued Randall Terry. They sued his Operation Rescue right out of existence. I think our pal Beth in Dallas may recall that history. Long ago, we had somebody on the program talking about exactly that. The Klan, in one of its manifestations, was sued out of existence. It's amazing what a civil judgment can accomplish that a criminal trial cannot. A criminal trial only sends one or a handful of defendants to the Gray Bar Hotel. A civil judgment, on the other hand, takes away all their money. And that'll slow them down a mite. Considerably, even. As to the lawsuit filed by the chairman of the Department of Homeland Security Committee, Randy Radar said, I thought only the USAG could do that. No. Congress is its own creature. The Attorney General is solely a department of the executive. The Congress can manage its own legal business. At least until, those six Solons, Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, and Ann's Boy Neil, and Sammy shoot the black kid in the back of the head at 30 paces, even though he's running away and poses no risk, Alito. And, of course, Brat Kavanaugh, who likes beer and having his mortgage paid off by some anonymous donor. And last but not least, Amy COVID Barrett. It remains to be seen if they'll say that, because I'm sure the defendants will run appealing. They can't do that. Right now they can. Who knows what those six Solons will do. So, we'll watch it and see how it turns out. Now, David in South Carolina, Stan, just sent along a tweet from Asha Rangappa. Read the below letter and then read the messaging pushed by Russia as far back as 2018 from a DOJ criminal complaint exposing Project Lochte, the same project that it was pushing for civil war if Trump was impeached. That same complaint had messaging targeting Marco Rubio. Betcha he's the next target of Trump's wrath when precious princess Ivanka my daddy Trump Kushner runs for his seat. He's attacking Mitch McConnell as well.
The Republican Party can never again be respected or strong with political leaders like Senator Mitch McConnell at its helm.
So David in South Carolina, Stan, points out, this white-wing coup shit is not coming from thin air. It's from the Kremlin and their favorite asset. Is there a new version of Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo out yet? That's Rock and Roll Hoochie, C-O-U-P. It's funnier in print than it is me saying it because it's a homonym. That's what we need. We need some legislation in the laboratories of democracy here. We got to get rid of them homonyms. Them homonyms. Yep. God only made straight nyms, not homonyms. Lee in New York says, because y'all won't let this shit go, will you? Lee says, I know Brett Kavanaugh likes beer. Does he like Long Island iced teas, too? Well, that may be something that only Mrs. Brett can answer. Billable Rick, however, says, I started drinking Long Island iced teas in my law school days because it's the perfect drink for a lean budget. All you need is one of them, and you're buzzed for the night. Perhaps it's an acquired taste that you and Brother Deacon Asa, a.k.a. Genghis Khan, simply haven't yet mastered. Nor do I have any plans to try. Let's put it that way. Yeah. But it's going to be, or has the potential to be, a rather busy Titanic Tuesday. Consider this from the Associated Press by Jason Dearen, Juliet Linderman, and Martha Mendoza. It turns out that around the country, nurses on the front lines of the battle, the struggle against COVID-19, the Don-demic, it remains, the Trump-pandemic, it remains, they're still trying to get by on one miserable N95 mask per day. Thousands of nurses have died as they attempt to staunch the spread of this pernicious virus. And they get one N95 a day because the hospital management says, well, that's all we got, and that's all you can have. Only that's not exactly true, according to the Associated Press. Because while people like Mary Turner at a hospital outside Minneapolis gets one N95 mask a day for her entire shift, and the AP report notes that in the days before the pandemic, she'd put one on, treat a patient, take it off, throw it away, put on another one, because that's how you quell the spread of disease. But because we were so ill-prepared for this pandemic, because of Nitwit Nero and his gang of foot pads, cut purses, ass kissers, highwaymen, waylayers, and whatnot, there simply weren't enough of them. And to this day, you still can't, out in the wide, wide world, you can't buy an N95 for civilian use. They are all saved for the desperate needs of healthcare workers. Enter Mike Bowen, who has a warehouse outside Fort Worth, Texas. And inside that warehouse outside Fort Worth, Texas, are cases and cases and cases and cases and cases and cases stacked way up. And all of those cases and cases and cases and cases and cases have copious N95 masks inside them. No, really. They're manufactured by a company Mike Bowen owns called Prestige Ameritech, and they can do 250,000 N95s per day. 1,000,000 N95s every 4 days. And he can't get rid of them. He is N95 mask poor. And he doesn't have enough orders to clear his warehouse space. So the government recently gave it. Get the hockey puck. The government recently gave him the authority to sell his N95 masks that are desperately needed in hospitals all around the United States. And some, you know, ordinary workaday civilian Americans, you know, would probably like to have one or two as well. But he got authority from the government to sell them overseas. Really? Meanwhile, Mary Turner, referred to a moment ago, works for an outfit in Minnesota called North Memorial Health, and they issued a statement when AP started nosing around that supplies have stabilized, but we're still limiting use because we must remain mindful of that supply. Apparently, they haven't heard of Mike Bowen and Prestige Ameritech, who makes 250,000 N95s per day. And the authors of this story say, while supply and demand issues surrounding N95 respirators are well documented, until now the reasons for this discrepancy have been unclear. The logistical breakdown, because of course, the logistical breakdown is rooted in federal failures over the past year. Note to any lurking maggots, that means Trump administration. To coordinate supply chains and provide hospitals with clear rules about how to manage their medical equipment. The AP got hold of some internal government emails. And those emails show, and I would guess at some point there'll be a hearing in the House and or Senate about this, that the Nitwit Nero administration deliberately withheld information about new mask manufacturers and availability from healthcare providers. You know, because this pandemic has been such a great thing for COVID Caligula and his blood-soaked cronies. The AP says exclusive trade data and interviews with manufacturers, hospital procurement officials, and frontline medical workers reveal a communication breakdown, not an actual shortage, that's depriving doctors, nurses, paramedics, and other people risking exposure to COVID-19 of first-rate protection. When the shortage of N95s developed, the CDC modified the guidelines that said, use it once and throw it away. They said, you can have extended use and reuse only if supplies are depleted. But oddly enough, they didn't define the word depleted. You'd think that depleted would mean out or almost out. But if you do, you've never run into somebody who's in charge of a warehouse. There's an old MASH episode that deals with this. Well, yeah, but if I give you one of my two incubators, I'll only have one incubator. Or it was an autoclave. Yeah, no, it was an incubator, wasn't it? Not an autoclave. It was an incubator. Most hospitals are still doling out only a mask a day or less to each employee. And many hospital procurement officers say they're relying on CDC guidelines for depleted supplies, even if their own stockpiles are robust. Meanwhile, there's a guy named Chester Trey Moeller. He was a political hack appointed by the Nitwit Nero administration. And he said that they had been successful in ramping up mask production, but there was a federal breakdown in connecting those who need them with the new supply. We are forcing our healthcare industry to reuse sanitized N95s, or even worse, wear one N95 all day long. Gee, I wonder why. So this story was a while in the writing, because AP reporters spoke to procurement officers at over 300 American hospitals. and every procurement officer say, well, we got enough N95s, anywhere from 2 to 12 months worth, sitting in storage. Because they're afraid there's going to be another surge. And they haven't heard about the people who, the companies that are churning these things out for all they're worth. The demand for N95 masks for medical use is said for this year to be about 5.7 billion masks. Now, I can get lost in ciphering in a real hurry, but if you're churning out a million masks every 4 days, and it takes 1,000 million to make a billion, that's one company. And there's more than one company making them. But this is the kind of thing that the Biden administration has to contend with. When you've got a... Bear with me. Hold off on the hate mail, please. But let's say you've got a Republican administration on the way out that has at least made a minimal effort to be competent. How far back would we have to go for one of those? And you got an incoming Democratic administration, then you can sort of you can have a kind of a flow, and it's not all brush fires all the time. But when you're coming from a maladministration that makes a circus, and it's cabal of clowns look competent, you've got a much bigger problem to deal with in both the short and the long run. So all those hospitals say they've got enough N95s, but out of the 300 hospitals spoken to by the Associated Press, all but two of them, that would be 298, and I can cipher that, 298 hospitals are still limiting doctors, nurses, and other workers to one mask a day. Some of them are limiting doctors, nurses, and other hospital workers to one mask per week. Hint. This is not how you stop the spread of a deadly virus. Desperately trying to pass the buck was Dean Weber, who's the vice president of corporate supply chain management for Sanford Health of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which, of course, is a failed nightmare the plague rat state, thanks to Kristi Noem, their maggot governor. And Dean Weber said, well, the N95 per patient guideline, we put that in place with the help of manufacturers. You know, the mask manufacturers are in the business of selling masks. We prioritize safety over cost, but I don't think they have to be tossed after each use. We are all, in fact, you know, just infatuated with an N95. Right, because it's an infatuation. By God, I bet I know how Dean Weber fucking voted. Yeah. John Wright, on the other hand, who is in a similar position with Salt Lake City's Intermountain Healthcare, said that reusing masks or wearing them longer would not be appropriate once they have enough supplies. And he plans for his hospital to be back to single use within 2 weeks. Jesus. I kind of feel sorry. You do, but you don't. I kind of feel sorry for the Biden administration. I don't feel sorry for them because they wanted the job. America desperately needed them. But I can have some degree of sympathy for all the miserable shit that they are having to slog through. Just trying to unfuck our country. So meanwhile, the CDC is, and the National Institutes of Occupational Safety and Health are trying to sort out some new guidelines. Suzanne Schwartz, director of the FDA's Office of Strategic Partnerships and Technology Innovation, said, there have been a good number of new NIOSH mask approvals that have been granted, but the access to those new manufacturers, there seems to be a hurdle there. FDA is trying to identify that blockage. Well, I'm guessing there's probably a maggot stopping up the drain. And as far back as December 22nd, one individual said, apparently there's a significant domestic production capacity going unused for the lack of orders, and we've tried to address the supplier-purchaser disconnect. Forgive me, please. Maybe I'm wrong here. But would we still be having these problems if we had a healthcare system that was not run solely and exclusively for the purpose of generating holy profits? I don't know. This is a lengthy article from the Associated Press. They write, N95 still appear on the FDA shortage list, in part because of reports from doctors and nurses who say they still don't have enough. So the doctors and nurses are saying we'd need masks. But the reason they don't have masks is because at least 298 hospital systems are kind of fond, I guess, of not having masks get thrown away after a single use because we've got an infatuation with N95s. Yeah, and that's it. We've got a crush. We've got a seventh grade schoolgirl crush on masks that can significantly diminish the transmission of a deadly fucking virus. David Hargrave, Senior Vice President of Supply Chain for Premier, a group purchasing organization that helps buy equipment and supplies for thousands of hospitals across the U.S., couldn't help making a reference to that which he thinks probably more about than anything else. The concept is similar to when trading is halted on Wall Street. You put the protective allocation in place to prevent folks from hoarding and overbuying, therefore exacerbating the shortage situation. Really, it's all just Robin Hood and GameStop. Yeah, sure. So you'll probably see this pop up on some news aggregator somewhere, but it is a hatefully frustrating story to read. It's crazy. It's crazy making. And so when you take that alongside this story from Jared Rodriguez over Mike Ludwig over at Truthout. There's a new multidisciplinary commission of experts who studied the COVID Caligula maladministration's response to the pandemic and published their findings in the British medical journal, The Lancet. And the upshot of what they found out is that had we had a competent response to the pandemic, we probably would have had death rates similar to other wealthy nations like Canada and Japan. And in calendar year 2020, what the conclusion that these researchers reached is that, I would hate for someone who lost someone to COVID-19 to see this story, because if I were that person, I could not contain my rage. I simply couldn't. Because, the failure to contain COVID in the U.S. confirmed that our approach to health care and public health is broken. And COVID Caligula made a bad matter worse. That's what the experts who examined the situation found. That 40% of the COVID deaths in the United States did not have to happen. That just makes you sick at your gut. And so this multidisciplinary panel of 33 people with expertise in clinical medicine, public health, epidemiology, community medicine, economics, nutrition, law, and politics looked at how Nitwit Nero's maladministration was running. And they've been running the analysis since 2017. And so they issued a report that is described in the Truth Out article as an indictment of both Trump and a healthcare system that values profit over human life. And this is considerably exhaustive, really. Because, among other things, the article notes that our life expectancy started lagging behind that of the United Kingdom, Germany, France. And you're not going to be surprised when I say this. Beginning on January the 20th, 1981, when old 666 himself, the greasy-headed B-movie actor who once had sex with a young starlet and then offered her a cold hamburger, Ronald Wilson Reagan, ascended to the presidency. Kevin Grumbach, a professor of family and community medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, and a co-author of the report, said that is the turning point where health started falling in the United States compared to the other G7 nations. We totally shifted to conservative and neoliberal policies, and that corresponds with the deteriorating health in the country relative to other nations. Because, among other things, the 666 administration instigated policies that pulled the government away from its traditional role in healthcare and education and began the concentration of wealth in the hands of the upper classes that we see even, yea, verily, unto this day. Charming, isn't it? Anybody surprised? Because I would not be the surprised person. Among other things, Well, life expectancy's dropped in that period of time, 3.4 years on average, and it's even lower among the African-American community and for Native Americans. Rates of midlife mortality before the pandemic among African-Americans and Native Americans were 42 and 59% higher, Jesus, than for white folks. And, of course, we know during the course of this pandemic that people of color are far more likely to die of COVID than white people. And during the pandemic, the mortality rate between black and white in America has jumped by 50%. Mary T. Bassett, director of the FXB Center for Health and Human Rights at Harvard University, also a member of the commission, in a statement said, "The disastrous bungled response to the pandemic made clear how existing long-standing racial inequities simply have not been addressed." Again, you can find this at truthout.org. And the author notes that, of course, there was the Republican effort to take health care away through by repealing the Affordable Care Act, take health care away from tens of millions of Americans. But less known is the COVID Caligula maladministration's attack on Medicaid, where health care coverage dropped by 2.3 million people. Out of that number, about 760,000 kids and teens lost access to health care. Before the pandemic, they were talking about a $920 million cut to Medicaid. I'm sorry, $920 billion cut to Medicaid. And somehow or another, we can't seem to come up with a program that would simply make sure that everybody who needs medical care gets medical care. During the four-year long reign of homicidal misery of COVID Caligula, well, environmental and occupational hazard deaths had been going down, but between 2016 and 2019, they spiked to 22,000. A lot of it related to the effects of pollution on the ability of human beings to go on being, you know, alive. Actions have consequences, don't they? God, what consequences they have. So those two stories seem to go kind of hand in hand. And we're going to learn going forward as the years unroll and the nitwit Nero maladministration becomes more and more a thing of the past. In our present, we will find out how toxic, how deadly they really were. How malevolent. How deadly. Jesus. Oh, and speaking of the pandemic, a little thing that came out over the weekend. Instagram has bounced Bobby Kennedy Jr. He's been banned. Facebook, owner of Instagram, issued a statement saying, we removed this account for repeatedly sharing debunked claims about the coronavirus or vaccines. And we now know a little bit more about what he's been up to. The New York Times reporting that he is known now as an anti-vax crusader. And that a study in 2019 discovered that two groups, one of which was his nonprofit, that is now called Children's Health Defense, had paid for more than half of the advertisements on Facebook that spread anti-vax, toxic, malinformation. More than half. Of course, back in 2019, Mark Zuckerberg and company were eagerly cashing the checks. Wait a minute, what? You're saying this is anti-vax stuff and it's not really true? And yeah, but the check cleared. Capitalism, honey! And so over at Instagram, he had 800,000 followers. And tries to play footsie with the fine line of just bullshit hucksterism versus science. He said in the past, he said, I'm not opposed to vaccines as long as they're safe. But then he turns around and does things like endorsing bullshit links between vaccines and autism. And has gone so far as to say, hey, what are we worrying about here? It's better to just go ahead and get the virus than get a vaccine. Curiously, however, while Facebook took down Bobby Kennedy Jr.'s Instagram account, inexplicably, they did not touch his Facebook page that has over 300,000 followers on it. And since the checks are still clearing, presumably, Facebook said, we have no plans to take down Mr. Kennedy's Facebook account at this time. Do you begin, this is Titanic Tuesday. Do you begin to get a sense of how much work there is to do to unfuck our country? I can remember far back enough that I can recall when Bobby Kennedy Jr. was a leading light of progressive broadcasting. I got to know him some. Came down to the Coal River Valley to make a documentary film about mountaintop removal and sustainable energy. I'll never forget the one line, and I think it's in the trailer for The Last Mountain, where he says, "We're going to West Virginia to see if we can help save a mountain and maybe put up a wind farm." And then he was never heard from again. Yeah. Well, market economics, right? Sure. I got a note from Matt in San Francisco. Subject line, battle fatigue. Yes, those of us who have been in the trenches since Reagan are really tired of this shit. Coming of age as a young gay man in the early to mid-80s made it necessary to get engaged in politics a lot sooner than most of my straight friends. I remember being thought of as an alarmist, and why was I so passionate about working against Republicans back in the day? Why couldn't I just calm down and accept that it takes time to change things, blah, blah, blah? Maybe now, Matt surmises, after 45 and the mass death, today's youth will pick up the torch and do a better job of getting results than my generation did. Have I told you how much I hate Republicans lately? By God, Matt, if anybody has the right, you do. You and the larger overarching gay community that begged and screamed and wept as that gang of thugs that worshipped at the altar of that greasy-headed old B-movie actor did everything they could to ignore a viral epidemic that came near, no, not near, that destroyed far too many good, loving relationships. Wow, says Jack in Shreveport, the life expectancy impact didn't even lag a bit behind the Saint Shithead, the time Saint Shithead started the wonderful conservative movement. Oh, it was a movement, all right. And it stank like one in the warm summer sun. Yeah. It, by the way, Nitwit Nero attacked Moscow Mitch today. Darlene sent this along. He's issuing statements through his spokes creep, Jason Miller, now. And it started out even nastier than it ended up. Darlene noting, he's back. In his statement, he said,
the Republican Party can never again be respected or strong with political leaders like Senator Mitch McConnell at its helm. McConnell's dedication to business as usual, status quo policies, together with his lack of political insight, wisdom, skill, and personality.
See, all these words are how we know that Nitwit Nero didn't actually write it.
Has rapidly driven him from majority leader to minority leader, and it will only get worse. The Democrats and Chuck Schumer play McConnell like a fiddle. They've never had it so good, and they want to keep it that way. We know our America First agenda is a winner, not McConnell's Beltway First agenda or Biden's America Last.
And it was ugly, because COVID Caligula can't do anything that isn't ugly. But someone who's close to COVID Caligula said that they had to tone it down a bit from the first draft. They issued the statement instead of him having a news conference, maybe because they realized that nobody'd show up for it. God, I hope no one would show up for it, but that's me hoping way above my pay grade relative to the basic instincts of the for-profit media. The New York Times claiming that aides were afraid that he'd go off track. No, really? You were? And say even uglier things extemporaneously. According to Politico, a person familiar with the crafting of the statement confirmed that it could have been far worse. An earlier draft mocked McConnell for having multiple chins. But Trump was convinced by advisors to take it out. That according to Sam Stein. God. Hopefully we'll get past this shit. Wouldn't it be nice if we could count on the for-profit media not to run down to Mara Sleazo if he decided to hold a press conference? But that really is way too much to hope for, isn't it? So here we are at the halfway mark of the program, exactly. And we have $480 to go to catch up with fundraising. It'd be nice to take it down some so that we're not looking at quite such a whopping Friday on the front porch community made miracle. And, you know, February is a shorter month anyway, so that's going to be a little bit of a problem. Not too much, maybe. But yeah, 480, $180 means we're fully funded for yesterday. And anything beyond that is just beautiful. Sorry to have to talk about it. I don't like it. Had a note from Arnold in PA. When I first heard about the Proud Boys, Arnold says, I was sure it was some kind of gay group, not being disparaging. Just, you know, sounds kind of that way. Yeah. Arnold says Ring of Fire used to be great. Yeah. And then, you know, I don't know, the anti-vaxxer beetle invaded somebody's brain. Ugh. So, let's run over to the Skype line and check in with our pal, not billable, other not billable Rick. Hey, Rick.
Hey, you can just call me Rick the Viking if you want to.
Okay.
But yeah, the weather down here in Illinois is making my Scottish heart very happy. It's cold and snowy, just the way I like it.
I don't. I just don't. This. It's funny. It always feels like February is the short is the shortest month that takes the longest time, because this is the worst part of winter, and this is when it gets really annoying to people like me who deal with seasonal affective disorder syndrome.
Yeah, because I'm photosensitive. Luckily, I dodged that bullet, but my entire apartment is pretty much blacked out. My friends like to joke that I'm the friendly neighborhood vampire. I don't bite; I just nibble, and only on request.
I used to be more attuned to the cold. Back in the day, I was sitting in my little cracker. I would sit in my little Cracker Box Palace apartment in January with the door open. There was really no sense in closing it because it was such a shitty apartment. The wind was just going to blow it open again. So I just layered up, put on the fingerless gloves, and got back to typing.
I thought you were going to say we just come in through the walls.
Oh, they did that too.
Yeah, they gotta love that cheap construction. But yeah, the main reason I called is because I was hearing you talk about autism and all this other stuff. And on a side note, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're there.
Okay. Jason Miller, is it just me or does he look like a sentient Chucky doll that mated with a neck beard?
That's a little. Yeah, I think so.
But being autistic myself, I despise a lot of these groups because we deal with a lot of the same stuff that the LGBTQ groups did in the 80s with the whole be quiet, be nice, don't rock the boat, you don't want to piss off the senator shit. And they wonder why we haven't made any advances since 1970.
With the vaccines cause autism thing, it always pisses me off, Rick, because there is an implicit statement in there.
Yeah, you'd rather have a dead kid.
You'd rather have a dead kid than an autistic kid.
Whereas I'm perfect proof that autism, the only time autism is really a problem is when it, in the large term, like most of the stuff they do to teach autistic kids how to blend into society is actually very detrimental to autistic people because it teaches us to hide our autistic selves to make non-autistic people less uncomfortable. It'd be like telling a blind person to suck it the fuck up and get rid of the cane because you don't want to have to deal because the cane makes someone.
Well, you know, I know a little bit of that, a little bit about that from a strictly non-autistic point of view. But you're absolutely right. And the fact of the matter is, I don't know. I mean, it ain't a disease. It's not a disorder.
They've actually done a lot of research, and they're starting to suspect that the reason we have society today, neurotypicals develop society because it helps develop society because they brew beer. Autistic people helped develop society. A lot of evolutionary biologists are starting to look at, and geneticists are starting to realize, by spreading technology. We become fascinated with tech, and that's not a new thing. They're starting to guess it was probably even present during the Paleolithic era. So the guy who created, figured out how to make fire was probably some autistic dude sitting in the back of a cave smacking rocks together. And he figured out how to make fire.
You were going, you went exactly where I was going. There are so many examples of that. I remember years and years and years ago on this program talking about, and I even wrote an essay about it somewhere along the way, about the first person who thought, who, you know, sat there by the shore and thought, you know, I'm going to jump in and I'm going to see if there's anything good to eat on the bottom of the ocean.
And comes back about this on and, last Friday.
Yeah, and comes back up with an oyster, and then says, "Well, okay, there might be food in here. How do I get into that?" And maybe, so you know, and maybe observe the otters floating along on their back with an oyster and a stone, and you know, whacking the hell out of the shell until you get to the yummy, somewhat slimy goodness inside.
Yeah, and then he realized if you put a stick on it, it works even better.
Right, and one of my favorite evolutionary biology stories is what we call corn.
Yeah, like original corn was probably about the size of your pinky nail.
Well, it's a grass, Rick. It's a grass. It resembles nothing like a corn stalk. But yeah, somebody looked at it and said, I wonder what would happen if we fucked with that and planted it and fooled with it for 10,000 years. Might be good to eat.
And one of the other things that these evolutionary biologists have started noticing is that the descriptions from early traders, like the people who would move between early societies, the ones we've deciphered from like the Sumerians and stuff like that, the stuff we have figured out from those early societies, almost all of them describe traders as usually being eccentric, odd, and basically it's a list of autistic traits because autistic people are very – we're okay with being alone for long periods of time without human interaction, which in a world with maybe 500,000 inhabitants is a big problem when you're moving 2 or 3 years without talking to another human being just to trade with another village, which would drive most human beings into madness and psychopathy. But as an autistic person, we're like, do-do-do-do-do, ooh, cool rock, and we just keep going on with our day.
Yeah, I've often wondered about the first person who walked into that cave at Altamira in Spain and said, you know what I want to do? I want to paint a buffalo. Really dark in here. I want to paint a buffalo.
Yeah, I'm almost willing to bet that the early shamans and the people who painted those caves were probably autistic people, because non-autistic people don't think outside the box like that within a rigid society like cavemen had, where they were almost all hunting. They would see this kid who could see or interact with things that they didn't see or interact, or see things in ways they didn't think of. He would end up being a shaman, put into the cave to talk to the spirits and into painting a wall.
Well, to go back to Bobby Kennedy for a minute and these other anti-vax assholes.
And he's the reason I stopped listening to Tom Hartman, because Tom Hartman put him on the air repeatedly and helped push those anti-vax theories.
Well, you know, anything, you know, anything for a buck. That concept we were talking about where, you know, somebody would rather have a
and no disparaging to sex workers.
No, I understand. But, you know, where people would rather have a dead baby than an autistic baby. The other thing that factors into that, Rick, is that there is a public lack of understanding of people on the spectrum, where the word autism immediately triggers an image of a child who is absolutely non-communicative, or at best Rain Man.
Yeah, and the thing is
that that's not what the spectrum is.
Yeah, and one of the things that a lot of people don't understand about the spectrum is most non-communicative autistic people can communicate. The problem is that society doesn't want to give them the tools to do so. Most of them just can't communicate verbally. And they see their outbursts and meltdowns as proof that they can't think for themselves. But if you were a person who'd lived 13 years with people treating you like you're an infant your entire life, talking down to you and just being generally dismissive of you, I'd throw a truck at someone's head too.
Odd you should use that image, because I will never forget the day that Agnes was driving along, and I don't know what it was, but it was hard enough to make her yell. Came flying up out of the back of the van, cronked her right in the head.
Toy Tonka truck?
Something like that. Then, of course, it had been launched by our son, who, a few months back, was finally diagnosed as being on the spectrum.
Yeah, and one of the biggest problems for autistic people is the fact we're just dismissed. And generally, we see that pain will elicit a response. So if you're an autistic kid who's very bright but uncommunicative and you want people to leave you the hell alone, you're going to start throwing stuff and punching people. Because they don't give you any other outlet, whereas they've noticed in most studies, once you give an outlet like a speech-to-text device or teach them how to communicate through a word board or something, their meltdowns almost entirely disappear. The problem isn't with the autistic child, it's with the parents.
You know what you call immediately to mind for me, because of where I grew up? I grew up 8 miles from a house called Ivy Green. And it's in Tuscumbia, Alabama. And it is the birthplace and childhood home of one of the most brilliant women this country has ever known. Helen Keller.
Helen Keller?
Yep.
And some people suspect she might have been on the spectrum, which is why she was able to learn how to communicate like that much easier than other people who have had that same condition. They don't think it was just her teacher. They think that she might have had a unique neurochemistry that allowed her to pick up on things and connect dots that otherwise wouldn't have been able to.
But I also thought about it, Rick, in the context of what you said about society wants to erase people on the spectrum and
they
not
do.
See
they,
them. Well, that's exactly
more than that.
That's exactly what happened with Helen Keller.
And it's more than that. In some societies, and in some places, even in the U.S., they don't want to just push us out of the mainstream. They legitimately want us dead.
Well, there have certainly been regimes on this planet that have done things like that. And the reason I brought up Helen Keller, though, is because I ran across something that absolutely blew my mind. And that is, it's like an internet meme. It's not a meme. It's a thing where young, intelligent people, children, will argue till hell freezes over that Helen Keller wasn't a real person, that she's fiction, that she never truly existed. Because no one could ever do what Helen Keller is said to have done.
The stupid, it burns.
It crawls all over me. I mean, it runs through me like a dose of salts.
But one of the other problems I have, and this is something a lot of people don't realize, you know the guy who invented gay conversion therapy, a Dr. Lovias, I think his name is?
Or
something?
Right.
He also invented what we know as ABA, Advanced Behavioral Analytics. It's literally rebranded gay conversion therapy for autistic people, except they can go a step further because we're not seen as people by most medical professionals still to this day. We're seen as tabula rasa, blank slates. And so what they do to teach us there's a place called the Judge Rottenberg Center up in New York, and they've been going through litigation for years because of this. They literally use high-voltage electric dog collars for Burmese mountain dogs on us.
Jesus Christ.
It's literally, it's been described as a step above a Nazi concentration camp. The only thing it's missing is the showers.
Yeah, it's a fucking, it's fucking torture.
Yeah, they torture us until we appear non-autistic, and then they wonder why we have severe mental health issues our entire life. I got lucky. My dad and mom knew I was a little odd, but they embraced my oddness and taught me to be myself and embrace my autistic self without realizing I was autistic, because I wasn't diagnosed until I was 23. But they still supported me without knowing what was going on and helped me the best they could.
I was going to ask you, were you diagnosed before or after your military experience?
After, because a lot of autistic people are barred from joining the military because we're seen by neurotypicals as being emotionally unstable. So you have to go through a whole list of flaming hoops just to be able to get in, and even then it will limit what you can do. But because I wasn't diagnosed before I went in, I had no inclination I had it because it didn't occur to me, I was okay, and I ended up getting to do whatever I wanted to.
Well, you know, one of the things, and you know, I'm on my own process of the journey of discovery right now, and will be for the rest of my life. But it has caused me to open my mind and think about things differently. I've thought a lot about my very small childhood, and that in turn makes me think about my dad, whom I loved dearly. But you know, in the World War II and post World War II era, there was no such thing as post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah, they called it shell shock, or
and for the most part, they just didn't call it anything at all, and sent everybody home and said, "Okay, go get the American economy going real good." Okay, how about that?
And then they wonder why there's an entire generation of people running around saying, "Well, my parents spanked me, and I'm okay."
Yeah, and in my case, you know, it doesn't bear going into too much detail. But I'm pretty sure my father was PTSD up to his eyeballs. I was born 18 years after his separation from the United States Navy. But he was, yeah. But when it's untreated, it never goes away.
Even when it's treated, it never goes away. You just learn to deal.
Right. But when it's untreated, in fact, it can get worse. I've wondered so many things about him. And you tell me, Rick, you tell me. I think I told this story on the air a few days ago.
I missed it.
Everybody that my dad worked with knew my dad was a smoker. He was also a tobacco chewer. But everybody who knew my dad or worked with my dad learned things really quickly. And one of the things they learned was that, you know, if they picked up a book of matches, they could tell it was his book of matches right away. Because every book of matches had to be removed in a specific, the matches had to be removed in a specific order. And yeah. I often, you know, we just sort of wrote it up to obsessive compulsive disorder. Or, maybe not even disorder. But the thing is, he had to remove them, and it had to end with the last match in the book being the last match on the last row, and in the match had to be in the middle of the book. And then when that match had been used, the empty matchbook had to be very carefully folded up upon itself. And then it had to be folded in two, and then it had to be folded in four, and then it could be thrown away. And the same thing happened when he would empty a pack of cigarettes. The package had to be very carefully folded up and thrown away. It just bothered the hell out of him if he just took an empty cigarette pack and crushed it and threw it in the garbage.
The OCD showing up with people with PTSD is common because they feel like they have very little control. So they basically develop OCD as a mental disorder to try to give themselves control over their life in the small ways they can without realizing it, usually subconsciously.
And I grew up, there were certain sounds that would just make me howl. Couldn't stand to hear them. Make me cry. Make me run away.
Have you ever thought about being tested? Because it travels on the male genome.
No, there's so many things that are sideways about me. That's way down the list. You know what I mean?
One thing that you also might want to know about being autistic, people being agender, asexual, genderqueer, being trans, all of that is actually proportionally higher than the average within the autistic community.
Yeah, I did know it was statistically overrepresented.
I'm talking by like 60%. 60% of people who are autistic fall into one of those categories. Being cis and autistic is actually a minority.
I did not know that. I didn't know that it rose to the level of a minority.
Yeah, it's either a minority or an even split, depending on who you look at, whose research you look at.
But it's outside the statistical norms of the general population.
Yeah, like if this was there's no way this is a rounding error or a like drift of the graph.
Well, so you mentioned testing. For anybody listening who might be curious, how do you test for it? I mean,
there's an entire checklist of things, and if you get a certain amount of them on there, you're clinically diagnosed. I basically lit it up like a Christmas tree because growing up autistic, but without the stigma attached to it that most autistic people have, I didn't mask most of my stuff. So it was all out there for her to see, whereas a lot of masked people, the reason older adults tend to not get diagnosed as easily is because they spend their life masking. And once you've learned to do that, it's very hard to take it off, even for a shrink. And that's the main reason why most grown autistic people never get diagnosed.
So, I mean, is it... I mean, I understand it as a spectrum. I also understand that we don't even some medical schools of thought don't even use the idea of the spectrum anymore.
No, they use ASD because, as I said, the whole low functioning, high functioning thing. Low functioning means that you have a communication difficulty they haven't diagnosed yet. Usually, high functioning means you can mask well enough to pass as a normal person until people start poking the edges.
Damn, the vocabulary sounds very similar.
To what?
Well, you know, that you can pass well enough that nobody's going to notice.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And, yeah, and because most autistic people learn to mask their autistic selves, that's also why so many of them end up in the closets, because they also learn to mask their not quite, you know, drier setting normal selves from being ridiculed, because a lot of times some of the worst cases of abuse I've ever seen towards autistic people being shoved into the closet or being told to stop acting so autistic is primarily within both the anti-vax movement and the evangelical movement. And that shit ain't a Venn diagram. That's a fucking circle.
Yeah, it's just one circle. Exactly. Oh,
it's awful shit.
Oh, and you can and as you know, as with you know, you started out talking about conversion therapy, they think they can pray autism away too. You know, the evangelicals.
Not be autistic. And I literally looked at her and told her if she ever said that to me again, I was going to kick her fallopian tubes into her eyeballs.
That probably didn't go over too well, but.
I'm not allowed there anymore, but considering I'm a Norse pagan and I've showed up there once in my kilt, I probably wasn't very welcome there to begin with.
It sounds like it is a little frigid in your apartment there. I can almost hear you shivering.
Oh, no, that's just my headset. I pace when I talk.
Well, Jeremy just dropped a note and said, subject line, masking. We learned to mask at early ages, Robin. It's a survival instinct. I would not be surprised to find out, because you know you talk about neurotypicals. I would guess that there is a relatively high percentage of people who are not neurotypical in the creative world?
Yeah, like they estimate as many as 70% of artists are on the spectrum to some degree.
Yeah. And now consider this. We also know that the titans of the corporate world are stunningly overrepresented in terms of psychopaths.
Yeah, but one of the biggest problems for autistic people, particularly artists, is that many of those individuals who end up, the sociopaths who end up in positions of power, are also usually the same people who will manipulate and abuse their staff who are heavily autistic. And basically, you see this a lot in video game companies run by these psychopaths. They're basically running them as digital sweatshops where they burn these autistic people out and end up throwing them away. And then wondering why there's such a high suicide rate within Silicon Valley computer programmers, video game developers. Basically, every aspect of the tech industry has a suicide rate that makes the drill sergeant suicide rate look like a fucking joke.
I take it that's high.
The drill sergeant suicide rate is one of the highest in the Army for non-deployed troops. But most of them have been deployed before, and most of them do have PTSD because you have to be deployed to be a drill sergeant these days, I believe. I'm not sure, though. I was never one, and I didn't plan on being one.
So you've got the neurotypicals, you've got the creatives on the spectrum, and you've got the sociopaths running everything. No wonder everything's so fucked up.
Yeah, and the autistic people are like, I just want to fix things and tinker with shit. Leave me the fuck alone. And then the sociopath comes down the golden escalator masturbating to his bank account, telling us we need to get this job done a week early.
Yeah, no, and we call that productivity. Well, you just got a note from Darlene in Connecticut, Rick, saying, honestly, if veteran Rick had never mentioned he was autistic, I would never have picked up on it or guessed, not in a million years.
And that's part of.
That's your ability to mask and normalize, right?
No, I just don't give a fuck. Completely different end of the spectrum. I'm not masking shit. I just don't give a fuck if people will think I'm weird. The confidence covers for the autism.
Well, that certainly does make sense. I think you're absolutely right. This isn't something that's been brought on by vaccines. At one point in time, wasn't there some study that involved the Amish community? Do I recall that correctly?
Yeah, the Amish community actually has a higher prevalence of autistic people because of the fact that most of them are, to put it sadly, a little bit more closely related than people would like to admit because of the closed insular societies.
I thought it might have had something to do with their having eschewed, modern technology. So consequently, you had people who, working in woodworking and doing tongue and groove and dovetail, that takes some attention to detail.
And what I think also the reason why it's higher in that community, I don't think it's the fact that they're so close, a little more closely related. When I say that, I'm not talking like second cousins. I'm talking like 31st or 28th cousins instead of 32nd. But when you get right down to it, as you said, that requires focus. So autistic people were probably more overrepresented because they were good earners within the autistic community or good producers.
You've really got my mind just ablaze, Rick, because going back to
the reproductive bias thing.
Are you familiar with a technology called flint napping?
Yes.
I figured you might be.
I have a reasonable understanding of how to do it, but not the technical skill to pull it off without breaking the arrowhead.
To this day, I don't think, the only excuse we have for the development of that technology is necessity. But
it wasn't necessity. I think it was opportunism. honestly, I think some autistic kid probably got bored down by a river and started smacking rocks together, and he found a sharp point. He went in. One of his relatives is like, hey, if I put this on the end of a stick, I could stab that fucker way the fuck over there.
Yeah, there's that. But the other thing, Rick, is that there's an evolutionary process. I mean, there's the Ashalian hand axe. There's the Clovis point, just as a couple of examples. And they're markers of where a civilization is in its evolutionary development.
But the thing is,
there some of them are so fine and so delicate that the amount of detail that has gone into it extends well past the utilitarian.
Yeah, and what I think honestly happened, because if you look at most of those, societies where they develop flint mapping, one of the weird little side things you start noticing is if you map the trade routes when they develop trade routes, which would have been autistic people like me probably trading, that's when you start noticing a timetable as it's spreading, kind of like a slime mold. And what they're starting to think is there's probably some autistic person who used this stuff to keep themselves safe while they were traveling. They go to some place like the Clovis. The Clovis were still using, like, unsharpened hammers and rock hammers, literally a rock on a stick.
Well, here's a beautiful example. It's called the Falcon Man or the Bird Man, and it's hammered. It is raw hammered copper.
Yeah.
And the copper came from Michigan, northern Michigan.
Yeah.
It was probably crafted in Cahokia. I bet you know where Cahokia is.
Cahokia, Illinois, the Cahokian Mounds, one of the largest cities of the Iroquois Confederacy until it collapsed.
Wasn't Iroquois.
I thought they were part of the Iroquois Confederacy.
No. It's Mississippi, and it's way pre-Iroquois Confederacy. It was gone by 1100 CE. So the copper is found in Michigan. It is crafted into a thing at Cahokia, and it winds up in a city in North Georgia on the banks of the Etowah River, and that's where it was found in the mound.
And I guarantee you some autistic trader was probably going through a city and saw this shiny copper thing and realized someone out there would be willing. So he grabbed it, since copper is relatively light, he could take it with him.
And cultures developed knowledge of where natural resources were. For instance, I think Northern California and Oregon, there are these huge deposits of obsidian, which is volcanic glass. Which makes the sharpest instruments known to humankind to this day.
They're starting to, and it's also antimicrobial, which is why they're starting to use it for scalpels.
Well, they used it as scalpels in an experiment decades ago, and the surgeons were like, "No, give those back to us. They're better than the molybdenum steel, please."
Because the edge of an obsidian blade is only one atom thick.
Now imagine napping that.
Yeah, and that would have taken a true craftsman. And during that era, when you had to scrape for every morsel and ounce of food, you probably were autistic if you were doing that, because the only person who would have enough focus to continue working on something for days like that without stopping would have been an autistic person.
Well, what's amazing is a master craftsman, a master napper, it can crank them out several in a day.
Yeah.
But one of the things that absolutely fascinates me is the variety and number. In spring plowing season, where you are, the Southeast, all over the place, these things will come to the surface. Probably, in something like hundreds of millions over the last, since white folks got here.
And
And what is that? And what is that? And what does that say about population and about the ability to do this kind of thing and the mind that conceives it?
And one other thing that's always fascinated me, because archaeology has always been my fascination, like lost civilizations and everything. There is someone who basically did a reverse Fermi paradox. Instead of looking at life outside of Earth, they decided to try to do an equation to figure out how many possible advanced civilizations could have lived on Earth within the time period that we roughly know of as the rise of the Homo sapien, about 100,000 years. And what could have come before that? Like, if something came that was more advanced, I'm not talking aliens here.
Yeah, because that's one of the things that drives me batshit, is humans. Humans are such fascinating, complex, creative little primates. Yeah, and I hate these shows that say, "Wow, you know, nobody here was ever smart enough to come up with filling the pyramids." Fuck
that's
you.
That's also racism. Because every time you hear them talking about ancient aliens, it's always a brown culture or an African culture. It's never a white culture. Because in their mind, no one who's brown or black could ever conceive of anything this magnificent.
Right. With the exception, and I wouldn't say none at all, but the vast majority of the really stunning stuff is coming from black and brown cultures.
Exactly. But every time that these ancient alien people, if you bring up some kind of advanced white culture, they're almost always like, yeah, they came up with that. They had advanced mathematics. 300 miles away, there's an African-American culture built the exact same fucking thing at the exact same fucking time, and all of a sudden it's
aliens.
But yeah, when you get right down to it, I've always been fascinated by – think about how many civilizations could have been lost during that time. How many times could someone have been standing in their living room talking across a headset like we are now and just driving themselves down a road to destruction, almost wiping themselves out, and we come back from the brink? Because we always talk about the fact that we're going to destroy the Earth. No, we're going to destroy ourselves. The Earth doesn't give a fuck about us.
Right, because evolution doesn't make judgments. Evolution doesn't Evolution doesn't engage in progress. Evolution is nothing but mutation.
Exactly. And when you get down to the environment, the Earth was a far more inhospitable place millions of years ago than we could ever turn it into, even with nuclear weapons. It'll fix itself eventually. It's just a question of how long.
Well, at one point, at least according – unless the information has changed since I was an eager young student, they said that humanity got down to about 2,200 – roughly 2,000.
Yeah.
About 2,000 examples, 2,000 people, and that we all are related out of that. And they were in, I think, North Central Africa. And it is out of those 2,000 people that some of them start wandering. You know, got to admit.
And eventually some of them get pasty.
Yeah, that was only about 7,000 years ago.
Yeah, it's a relatively rare mutation. It's also disappearing.
Redheads, blue eyes, blonde hair. Yeah, it's all disappearing.
And the funniest part about that.
And it's not because of any nefarious plot. It's because that's how evolution works.
And also, I would also argue that a large majority of white people are incredibly fucking stupid.
Well, there's that. There's definitely that. I mean, the Celtic or pre-Celtic cultures came up with Stonehenge. I saw an article the other day, and I clicked on it, and I was going to go, and now it's gone. But it was about the original. And I wish I had read it, because I hope it wasn't some ancient astronaut horseshit. But it was about the original location of Stonehenge in Wales.
They actually kind of think they may have figured out what the purpose of Stonehenge was, and it's not exactly a calendar. Some enterprising student realized the crystalline structure of the stones they used, the reason they milled them from where they did, was specific. If you hit them with a quartz hammer, they ring. It was a pipe organ.
Oh, that could be fun.
And if you hit them just right with a large quartz hammer, you can hear Stonehenge from up to 10 miles away.
I'm surprised there are people who let them hit it. Or I'm surprised the government will.
Yeah, that was my response when I read the article. I'm like, wait, they let someone actually smack that with a stick?
But yeah, I can.
They figured it out somehow. Some guy ran it through a mass spectrometer and realized that the crystalline structure is very close to the acoustic organ glass bowls Benjamin Franklin came up with.
Yeah, there's a genius.
And it's just the simple fact that he looked at it, realized that it needed a specific frequency, kind of like a tuning fork. You can't just hit any piece of metal and get it to ring. It has to be specifically designed.
Exactly. Well, I got a note from Billable Rick. Subject line: autism. Great conversation with veteran Rick. As I've mentioned on the program, my 25-year-old son Brian has Asperger's syndrome and is doing fantastic as a computer science major at UC Irvine. He's able to look at the world and solve problems in a different way from other people. Brian's just about to start his first paid job as a programmer part-time, which he got from a project that he did very well on at UC Irvine.
Yeah.
And good for him. You know, good for him.
Oh, and Spock, my cat, wants me to tell you hi. He's staring at me.
Oh, hi, Spock. Live long and prosper.
Oh, he will. He'll outlive us all.
Is there a girl cat in his future? You know, T'Pau, T'Pring, you know?
I don't know.
That was T'Pring, wasn't it? The girl Spock was.
Well, technically they never got married.
No, but he was supposed to. But that was T'Pring, and she was really cute in a Vulcan kind of way.
If I do get a female cat, another cat, it'll be a female for him to have some company. And I was planning on naming her T'Pring or Uhura. I couldn't quite figure out which. Depends on what color she is.
Okay.
I like black cats, and if she's a black cat, I'm going to name her Uhura because she'll be a little furry badass.
That's true. That's absolutely true. We know a little bit about that here.
Yes. And but when you get right down to it, there's so much that's been lost to history. I wouldn't be surprised if one of these days, one of these mining crews is digging under the earth, and we find out that humans have been here for more than 100,000 years because they dig into a buried city that's been buried by tectonic activity.
Oh, there's a lot of that speculative stuff out there, and you can go down that rabbit hole, and it'll make you crazier than Cooter Brown's rat.
Well, I'm not talking like ancient alien stuff. More like Assassin's Creed. Have you ever played those games?
I've watched my son play. So,
basically, about a million years ago, there was an advanced civilization, which is where all of the religions, everything we've ever known, come from, inside of the Assassin's Creed storyline. And what they end up doing is they figure out the world is doomed. A mass coronal ejection is going to wipe out the atmosphere, wipe out humans, and they try to save themselves through different projects. Each one of these projects is explored through the different Assassin's Creed games. And there are different factions within this group, this race of advanced humans that call themselves, they're called the Izu. But each of the gods that we worship now were one of those groups working on different projects.
Well, that's fascinating. I've got this crazy theory that all of social media is a down low attempt to create a human consciousness comprised of the life experiences of actual human beings.
That would make sense. And that would make sense if you're trying to create a time capsule or something that could survive the human race wiping itself out.
But I'm glad that you mentioned, because I think probably before you joined into the conversation, but I've talked about for a long time how it makes me crazy when I hear people say, you know, we gotta reverse climate change so we can change the earth. And anybody who's been with this program a long time knows that every time I see or hear someone saying it, no, goddammit, no. What we're talking about is trying to preserve the ability of the planet to support the species.
Yeah, like the planet doesn't give a fuck about us.
Right. I mean, it's going to be here.
Yeah, We are basically toe fungus as far as the Earth is concerned. It's just whether or not we become problematic enough to go get the fucking spray yet.
And as far as evolution and mutations are concerned, you know, we will mutate until we can no longer be successful, or we will wipe ourselves out,
or an
external event will come along, like, you know, a giant asteroid. My mind is still blown by the Harvard astronomer who is absolutely convinced that thing that went jetting through the solar system a year or so ago
is a spaceship.
Yeah, well, was some sort of manifestation of some sort of industrial or creative process.
The shape is too irregular and its path of travel is too streamlined for a natural object. And on top of that, it seems to change course randomly. And solar winds don't account for it. That's what piqued his interest. On top of that, its radar signature seems to change.
And of course, it's long gone now. I'm a big fan. God knows I hate what they did to it on Netflix, but I'm a big fan of the Richard K. Morgan trilogy, the Takeshi Kovacs trilogy of the early part of this century, Altered Carbon, and then there's two after it, and it just set my mind aflame with what he was suggesting.
I've never been a big fan of that type of science fiction. I'm more of the Star Trek-y type. I like the more optimistic view.
Oh, this isn't pessimistic.
I thought Altered Carbon was basically them using clones. It just didn't seem very interesting to me.
Oh, Altered Carbon in particular is worthy of study because he very cleverly bogarted a whole lot of noir and particularly Raymond Chandler fiction. For instance,
he uses
Bay City. Well, that's right. That's Raymond Chandler's fake place.
Okay.
But it's not so much about clones. It's about the ability to mechanically store personalities and move them from one body to another, synthetic, somebody else's body. You know, there are concepts of how we go about engaging in imprisonment in a culture where death has become a non-thing. I highly suggest you give it a second look.
A lot more interesting. Okay, I guess I just didn't quite understand the premise. Thank you.
But for the love of God, please don't watch it on Netflix. Please, pretty please, don't.
I wasn't going to.
That thing's garbage.
Soured it to me. I watched like 10 minutes and I switched back to Star Trek TOS reruns on Netflix. But what I was going to say is instead of calling me Rick the Viking, call me Rick the Norseman, because technically Norsemen and Vikings were two distinct groups.
Yes.
Vikings were basically pirates that got kicked out of Norway for being too much goddamn trouble and sent to Greenland and Iceland and basically told if you ever come back, we'll kill you.
Does that include France?
Yeah, the less problematic ones ended up in France after the whole invasion of Paris thing.
Yeah, less problematic is an entirely subjective sort of notion, really.
That's the reason I use it. It's a term of art here. they were basically pirates, criminals, and basically the kind of people you'd put into a max security prison in the U.S. today.
Well, that is my beloved spouse's origin.
One of the punishments they would do if you were so bad that even capital punishment was considered too dishonorable for you, they would literally put you in a boat with a bunch of other prisoners and no fucking oars. Pop a bunch of holes in the bottom, give you about 2 weeks worth of food and tell you to get the fuck out.
once again proving that separation from the tribal unit, the troop, if you will, the pack, is a form of punishment, and there is no such thing as the lone wolf human.
Exactly. A lot of them didn't survive the trip, but the ones who did ended up drifting to Norway and Greenland on tides and rip currents, and that's the reason why they existed, and also because they were expected to die. That's also why they did the whole reversing the names thing. That way, if Norsemen ever went adventuring to explore or trade and stumbled and figured out where they were, they'd tell them the name of the place. They'd go back and tell another group or hear about it in hearsay, and they wouldn't be able to find them. Because the Norse, it's like that kind of punishment from the Norse actually carried over for like seven generations.
Okay, so which group is it that gets the flaming boat funeral?
Both sides do that, but usually only for kings. Usually for anyone below the status of a king, prince, or higher up, you would get a funeral pyre because they wanted to preserve the body because of Ragnarok.
Kind of like that flaming boat thing.
Because technically, if you're buried at sea, you don't resurrect during Ragnarok to fight the final battle. You're basically the reason they did that is because the kings of old act as Odin's war council. The warriors are the ones who go out during Ragnarok and resurrect to fight. So warriors were typically given a funeral pyre. Civilians, farmers, etc., that weren't warriors usually just got a standard burial with a headstone. And kings were burnt with offerings to give to the gods when they got there to show fealty for when they arrived to be the general war council.
Nice work if you can get it.
Basically.
No, this is all just fascinating. I had no idea when I was preparing the program this evening that this was where we were going to wind up, but I enjoy it immensely.
Yeah, like that's the reason I clarified, because my ancestors are from Norway. They came to Scotland during the Norwegian invasion, the Anglo-Saxon invasion, in the 800s. We don't know their name. We only found know that they got married, ended up as part of Clan Lindsay, and then went from there, and then ended up over here during the Irish Potato Famine.
Well, I got a whole bunch of English, and some Scots, and if you do a 23andMe or an ancestry or whatever, it comes back, oh, Scandinavia.
Yeah, I did mine. It's mostly Scandinavian, but when you look at the migration patterns, they can even tell when you migrated. So basically, from what they can tell, we went to Scotland in the 800s, met up with another Norwegian Scottish family. Those two married together and eventually ended up becoming what we know as the Anglo-Saxon Lindsay clan, which were lowland Scots who ended up fighting on the side of the king during the Jacobite rebellions. My family was actually part of the founding of the Black Watch in the 42nd Regiment of Foot.
Wait, y'all fought for the English king?
Yeah, we were part of the Black Watch.
Son of a gun.
Lindsay clan is one of the few clans that can wear the Black Watch tartan without serving in the Black Watch, without insulting anyone, from my understanding, because we actually, the head of Clan Lindsay, when they founded it, was a general, was like a Lord something Crawford, the head of Crawford Castle, which is still one of our castles, and founded it to help keep peace after the first Jacobite rebellion.
Well, see, my Kincaid ancestors had to take it on the lamb after the second one.
Yeah. One of my ancestors probably shot at one of yours.
Well, yeah, or, you know, the story goes that there were three brothers, and they were quietly spirited out of the English camp and put aboard ship at Glasgow and wound up here.
Okay.
And they came to Virginia because their uncle had backed the wrong horse in the first one. And he wound up in Augusta County, Virginia, and built the first jail there, which was really weird to me because I took a back road. I was on my way to D.C., and I took a back road because I specifically wanted to see a certain stream where they had settled. And in that part of Augusta County, lo and behold, there was the Augusta County Detention Facility. It's like, son of a gun.
Yeah, one of the other things that we were talking a while back about me liking hunting and everything. On the note of like our past and everything, I actually try to teach myself how to use the weapons my ancestors used just out of homage to them. So I'm actually a trained self-taught swordsman, as well as I really want to get myself a 1690 model, like it's a remake of the 1690 model of the Pennsylvania long rifle with a percussion cap firing system.
Oh, you're not going to go with the original matchlock?
No, because I plan on hunting, and as I said, when I go hunting, I go for long periods, and the chance of a flash in the pan is too much problem for me. I don't want to have to deal with that in the field, whereas if you put a musket nipple on the percussion cap instead of the rifle percussion cap nipple, it actually removes the chance of a non-fire or a pop and no kick, which is incredibly dangerous with a black powder rifle because then you have to gunworm the bullet out on top of gunpowder that might be smoldering.
I understand. I've actually black powder hunted, and I understand that completely.
Yeah, have you ever tried to gunworm a bullet out?
I never had it happen. I was desperately afraid that I would.
The gunworm is actually where we get the corkscrew from. It's funny. We've had corked wine bottles for 7,000 years, but they didn't invent the corkscrew until the Napoleonic era, when a bunch of French soldiers got desperate and tried to open wine bottles and broke the corks. And realize that the opening for wine bottles is the exact same diameter as a 68 caliber musket barrel.
Jesus, 68 caliber. My God.
Yeah, and they figured out you can take the gun worm, shorten the handle down on it until it's about an inch, stick it in that bottle, warm it around a little, and you pull the cork out.
Yeah, and of course, when Cortez's people invaded the Valley of Mexico, they were carrying harquebuses with them, which, you know, those were matchlocked and...
They still use those then?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, it would have been a right era because they hadn't even invented flint yet.
Yeah, 1519.
Flintlock. Yeah, I was getting the era wrong. But, yeah, there's a company called Per de Soli, I think it's pronounced. It's an Italian shotgun maker. They're really well known for making good shotguns. They also make a...
Oh, Italian shotguns are exquisite.
The rifle's about $1,700, but... You can sabo round this thing and use just about anything up to a 50 cal for the rifle I want to get. I don't like modern firearms because, to be blunt, it's kind of hard to not know that your black powder rifle is fucking loaded.
Yeah, you're not likely to forget.
Yeah, considering it takes a half a minute to reload the bloody thing, you're going to know if a bullet's in it. And I figure if I need more than one bullet to take down whatever I'm hunting, I probably don't need to be hunting it, especially if it's a 50 cal.
And,
when you need to shoot that T-Rex in your next-door neighbor's backyard through their house.
God, a gut-shot T-Rex, that'd be ugly.
Yeah, and angry.
It'd probably just piss him off. Well, I tell you what, Rick,
those stubby little arms. I mean, think about trying to get back at you with those stubby little fucking arms.
Yeah, every time I get upset or have a lousy day, I just try to think of I just take a moment and ponder a T-Rex trying to put a fitted sheet on a mattress, and I get all better.
Well, I was thinking about trying to light my pipe with those little T-Rex arms, pack the pipe and get it going. That's what cheers me up.
See, I hate fitted sheets, though, so, you know.
I'm apparently fey because I can fold those damn things.
Jesus!
I smoke Prince Albert. Just imagining trying to get the Prince Albert out of that little packet and then into the pipe and pack it and light.
So if I actually called you and said, "Do you have Prince Albert in a can?" you'd say, "Well, yeah."
Well, no, because they don't sell it in a can at my tobacco shop, or I would.
Hey, Rick, it's been a delightful conversation, man. I really enjoyed it.
I'll let you go so other people can call in, and I really enjoyed the call tonight and the ramblings. And it's nice to have people I can talk to about stuff like this. So don't think I'm weird. Most of my family is
convinced
on the prepper route because I like black powder rifles. And I'm like, no, I don't have 300 pounds of toilet paper and 50 pounds of buffalo meat in my apartment.
Yeah, I just don't want to think. Yeah. By the way, you just got it before we disconnect. You just got a note from, let's see here, Jack in Shreveport. Question, comment for Rick. First of all, Blackwatch, how freaking cool. I also had a question if you think it's appropriate to ask. I couldn't get it done on time last Horn Chat when he was there. I wonder if Rick would have or does have any interest in text-based games. For example, I used to play a large network dungeon game. There's also single-user ones like Zork. You ever play the text games?
I played them. I tend to prefer the games I can replay without them deleting themselves off my hard drive. A lot of those single-use games would just straight-up delete themselves. That's why they're so hard to find.
I asked my son about Battlefield, and he said he had played it, but he couldn't find a clean game that hadn't been hacked all to be Jesus.
Yeah, PlayStation, if you play on the PlayStation, is a lot better about that because they're really on top of it. If you play it on the PC, it's very heavily botted. I prefer to play it on the console because it's a lot harder to mod. And the not only do you have to circumvent the game itself's anti-cheating software, but you have to circumvent the consoles. And if one of them doesn't catch you, the other one likely will.
Okay, I'll pass that information along to him.
But let him know that the Xbox, the Xbox and PC are very heavily botted. But go with if he wants to get away from that, go with PS4. And the PS4 tends to have the heaviest veteran community because we got tired of the Xbox cheating issues and some 13-year-old telling us that they slept with our mother.
Oh, lovely.
Trying to match, huh?
I said, oh, lovely. That's got to be fun.
Yeah.
Jeremy in Vermont pointed out, tell Rick, Ragnarok doesn't exist anymore. Disney did away with it after all. Disney.
Fair enough. Technically, in that movie, Ragnarok did happen because Suter showed up in Asgard. Technically, Ragnarok did happen. We just survived it in the Marvel Universe.
Well, we watched the latest episode of WandaVision last night, and that's just getting weirder by the minute.
Yeah, one thing people don't get about Ragnarok is it's different than most end of the world stories. In most end of the world stories for other gods, the humans are sacrificed to save the gods. In Ragnarok, the gods sacrifice themselves and then elevate the humans who prove themselves during Ragnarok to be the new godhead.
Well, I love the fact that two cultures as disparate as, you know, Northern Europe and Central Mexico can come up with the same kind of concept of a warrior's paradise. You get Valhalla out of the Scandinavian and Germanic tribes.
Well, it's not just a warrior's paradise. That's one thing a lot of people misunderstand, because that came out of the idea that it was just warriors that go to Valhalla came out of the German interpretation of it during the early 1900s and the Thule Society.
Okay.
So it's actually incredibly ableist and racist idea behind that, when in reality, it's anyone who dies in service. If you die as a nurse, you go to Valhalla.
Well, see, that's interesting. That's interesting because the Mesoamerican idea was it was a place called Tonatiocan, and a warrior who died in battle, straight to Tonatiocan. A mother who dies in childbirth, straight to Tonatiocan.
Same here.
Everybody else has to slog their way through the underworld and the afterlife, and that was just an ugly trip. And that's how they sold the idea of being willing to die in battle, or die in sacrifice. If you were human sacrifice, straight to Tonatiuhkan.
And they think that the whole idea behind human sacrifices within Norse society, one of the biggest reasons why they're starting to think that might have been a misinterpretation, is because it was all Catholic priests that would see these weird rituals, assume it's human sacrifice, and then write it as such. One of those events was a One of the first Viking burials they ever saw was a burial for a king by a Catholic priest. He wrote of it as a human sacrifice because he saw a young woman run out to the boat that was on fire and jump on board it, and he just assumed that it was a slave that had done it. When in reality, a lot of historical records are starting to show that was a grief-stricken wife of the king. Because to the Catholics and particularly the nobility of the area, the idea of marrying for love was completely foreign
madness.
Idea.
And the same thing, you know, remember, Cortez brought with him a cadre of priests, and they, of course, were horrified by the human sacrifice. Meanwhile, however, they had come across the Atlantic from a culture that was busy burning people at the stake. But somehow, what the indigenous Americans were doing was a problem.
And what they did is they found some scrolls from that actual burial that actually described it from the Norse point of view. And it turns out that that young woman was his wife, who he had met on the battlefield, and she saved his life on the battlefield. He married her, and she could not stand to live her life without him. So she threw herself on his funeral pyre after fatally stabbing herself on the dock.
Jesus. Wow.
Yeah, like, she loved him so much that she was willing to just jump on a flaming boat for him. And the idea of that to a Catholic priest, who most of his nobility hated each other, even if they were married, was a complete aberration. He couldn't understand, so obviously it had to be human sacrifice, because no one would love someone that much. Especially if they were king.
Yeah. Rick, you have yourself a good evening, my friend.
You too.
All right. Take care. Fascinating conversation. I live for that sort of thing. Let me just note, because we've got only a short time left in the program, we are still at $480 to go in fundraising. And that it would be really, really great if we could just finish off yesterday. Meaning to raise, you know, $180, and that takes care of Monday. We'll worry about today, you know, tomorrow, or something like that. Okay, so that's where it stands. Meanwhile, 50 pounds of buffalo meat has Elbert in Rhode Island thinking happy supper thoughts. American buffalo meat is extremely lean meat. I would love to eat it more often if it wasn't so damned expensive. Yeah, I added the damned expensive. He said expensive. But yeah, it's damned expensive. You have to cook it really carefully, because you can turn it into shoe leather in a minute, because there's very, very little fat in it. And so we found a way to get some food porn into the program. Wow, Sparky just shared something with me. Demolition crews have arrived at Mar-a-Lago to rip out Donald Trump's helipad after his exemption from Palm Beach helicopter free zone rule was revoked when he left office. Construction workers were seen at the former president's sprawling estate Tuesday with a red dagger and concrete cutting equipment. Red digger, not dagger. Damn it. Out damned its spot, right? A red digger and concrete cutting equipment demolishing the concrete helicopter landing pad set among the towering palm trees. Its removal, handled by contractor Pyramid Builders of Palm Beach from the western lawn of the 17-acre property, will cost in the region of $15,000, the permit shows. I guess that's on us, isn't it? When's that man going to stop costing us so goddamn much money? Well, I don't know. Todd asked earlier, did you conjure up that civil lawsuit activity last night? Did this happen to have anything to do with the dirty rice and blackened salmon you had for dinner? Yeah. Remember Todd adds how working people were promised that we would be taken care of after taking massive cuts to our health care and salaries? American working people's salary never recovered from that era. Even the inventor of trickle-down economics later admitted that it didn't work and it was bogus. Yeah, and well, David Stockman. Yeah, it was all bullshit. Day late, dollar short. And in an effort to knock down that $480 fundraising hole, I have an anonymous offer of $50 matching. If somebody's got 50 or 5 at 10, 10 at 5, whatever, if we can round up $50, it'll be matched, and that'll get us only $80 from being fully funded for Monday. And that's awful and awesome. Not awful, awesome. It's awfully kind. It's awesome. Thank you very much to our anonymous friend for making that offer, and hopefully it will be fulfilled in, the next 20 minutes or so. Robert in Australia says, Zoolander, another movie I can't watch because it appears in it. Wait. It? The orangutan? I've watched it a few times. Really? Or am I misunderstanding, Robert? A little help here. And let's run over and check in with Scott real quick. Hey, Scott, what's happening?
Let's do.
Oh, Jesus, you learned it too, huh? I thought you were a Catholic. Sure.
Yeah, but I left the Catholic. I did a stupid thing. Well, one of many stupid things. The first in a series of stupid things suitable for framing. I found Jesus, Bob. I found him. My old buddy Bob Porter, the late great, down there in Alexandria, Virginia, had a storefront ministry where he would snag teenagers to come in and learn about the Lord. And I was one.
He's one of them. Yeah. Yes. Do you remember so me?
I jumped
now
from the
stuck
old...
in my head, damn it.
Yeah, you'll thank me later.
No, I sincerely will not.
You'll hate me later. Go ahead. It's a free world. Do what you want. Yes. So I jumped from the theological frying pan into the fire and brimstone and became a Southern Baptist. It was an amazing... You know what I would like to do?
Tell us, Scott.
If I had all the money in the world, I would create an amusement park with one ride, and that ride would be a physical representation, where you could get in the car, strap in, the guy would throw the switch, and you'd go up that slow chain-driven incline, but the ride would consist of being inside of Rick's head. And it would be a fascinating place, an adventurous place, adventuresome, whatever. I'll tell you, I can sit here.
Just real quick, careful with the scrapey on the microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No worries.
God, here we go again. I don't know. Is this any better?
Seems to be.
Okay. Anyway, because Rick is most entertaining and informative to listen to. That's all I'm saying. It the twists and turns and things that you see, you know, with each twist and turn would be incredible. And with today's technology, there's probably a way to do it. As a matter of fact, there's somebody jotting down notes right now. Bill Gates or somebody.
All the notes that get jotted out of this program, amazing things happen.
Somebody with a shit ton of money, Bob. Let's see, Robin. The main reason I called, I got a heads up about this from Mark Maron, the comedian, the guy who used to be on Air America, blah blah blah. He's got a podcast.
Yes, a fantastic and, one.
Oh God, I get an email every Monday telling me who's going to be on this week. But before he says who's going to be on, he gives his little mini rant of what has happened since we last heard from him. And he mentioned that he watched a new 6-part documentary, BBC documentary by Adam Curtis. And it's called Can't Get You Out of My Head. So I immediately went to YouTube and found all 6 episodes and watched those last night. Have you ever watched, I don't know if I've sent the links to you for other Adam Curtis documentary series, but it may all be bullshit, but I'm telling you, it's highly entertaining bullshit. He makes connections that you would not believe. And I cannot even give you an example, because after you've watched more than 6 hours of an Adams Curtis documentary, you can barely speak for the first half hour after you, after you've watched. But I will send you an email with all of the links if you, if you've got 6+ hours to sit down and watch this.
Okay, I've been known to do Stranger, but hit me to just vaguely the topic, subject matter.
Well, it touches upon everything. I'm surprised you weren't in there. You know, the way it's described: love, power, money, ghosts of empire, conspiracies, artificial intelligence, and you, an emotional history of the modern world by Adam Curtis. Now, I don't know if that makes you want to watch. And they're really, I mean, they're really hard to describe. I can't, offhand, I can't think of the name, the names of the other two major series that, that he did. Do you remember, what the hell was that guy's name? I believe his name was James Burke, who did a show called Connections.
Sounds familiar.
I believe it was a PBS series. And then he did Connections 2, and I think there was even a Connections 3, where he takes an ordinary, commonplace thing or event and tells you all of the stuff that led up to it. Well, if you've seen James Burke Connections, this will give you some idea of what Adam Curtis does. But he adds a certain twist to it that I can't even describe to you. I know I'm not being at all helpful, but I'll send you an email with the links to it, and you can check it out. And as I was sitting here watching it, I was trying to think of people whose email information I do not have who would enjoy seeing this. I got to find a way to link to it so that more people can check this thing out, because I find this stuff fascinating, is what I'm saying, you know? And it wasn't at all comforting, I'll tell you that, right? I don't mean to do a spoiler, but by the time you get to the end of it, it's not at all comforting. I mean, everybody is in it. Putin, Trump, there toward the end. I don't know. I still can't even register a coherent thought here, because I'm still kind of overwhelmed by it. It's pretty dense, but it's informative. It's entertaining. It's everything you'd want in a 6+ hour documentary series. So anyway, and I was late to the program today. As a matter of fact, I had trouble getting to sleep when I finally did go to sleep. You shouldn't watch certain things before bedtime, because when you get to thinking about the nature of life and your place in it and the history that you've lived and the history outside of yourself that you know, that's not good before bedtime. You know? And so, I'm going to start a new...
That's the problem, Scott. Most of my viewing takes place before bedtime, and there's some shit I just don't want to fall asleep with it running around my neurons.
I know what you're saying. And this wasn't particularly
Because I'm prone
scary.
To some pretty weird-ass dreams anyway. It doesn't have to be scary. Just has enough to keep my mind, make my mind be busy all night long.
Yeah.
I woke up exhausted this morning because I spent the night watching movies. And not on a screen. Behind my eyeballs.
Yes, I know. I've been there, done that. Been there, done that indeed. So since I am late to the party and late to consciousness today, what's the status of Limbaugh? Because eventually he's going to answer that age-old question, when the fuck is this man going to shut up, you know? And I don't wish ill on anybody, except maybe him, you know?
Yep. I do understand, and I'm trying to be good. But when I think about the amount of harm that that horrible, horrible, privileged attempt at a human being has done to this country, not ideological, no, real harm.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to take a sip of coffee now. Wait a minute.
Good to the last drop. The hell's wrong with the last drop?
Yeah, that's got the stuff in it that'll get you, you know. I just...
But apparently, he missed 2 or 3 days last week. I don't know if he's been on this week or not.
Well, see, that's what brought him to mind. I don't know where I heard it, but I heard that he did. And there was even a note from his producer saying that, you know, it wasn't positive, if you get what I'm saying.
No, it was a tweet or something from Bo Snerdly.
God. And what a waste of talent. You know, the guy obviously had something going for him. Above and beyond his connections.
Yeah, the fact that his some daddy or something owned a radio station and said, "Honest to God, you're never going to get real work, are you, kid? Go spin records."
Well, if you've ever heard his air check on that Pittsburgh rock and roll station,
oh, I have, Jeff Christie, yeah,
Jeff, it's not much, you know, and I don't mean to point fingers because people could listen to my old air checks and point the same fingers, but he wasn't going to make it. He wasn't going to be the next Casey Kasem.
No, I can still do it. Best music, WLAY, Shoals area weather tonight. You know,
heading for the tippity top of the old pop crop. Stacks and stacks of crazy wax.
Yeah, by that time we were running on Drake Chenault 15-inch reel-to-reels in on quarter-inch.
People are
turning off if they haven't already. Before we do that, but the bottom line on Flush is that somewhere along the way somebody told him that he was a political genius, and he really and sincerely, truly wasn't. None of his crap withstands any scrutiny whatsoever. But he had some lucky breaks. Somewhere along the way, I can't remember the guy's name, but you know, he had the program in Sacramento or whatever it was, and he would rail 24/7, hammer and tongs, hand over fist against gay people.
Yeah,
and along came a gay man who taught him to walk and talk and act just like a blooming lady. And the next thing you know, he's got a gig. He's working in New York City because he's learned which fork to use with the fucking shrimp. And the rest, as they say, is a sort of history. But he never could have made it on his own. And that's why things like, talent on loan from God, my friends, drives me batshit.
Yeah,
I mean, and this is as close to nasty as I'm going to be, but if the last thing that runs through his head is his own voice saying, "Well, talent on loan from God," and the next voice he hears says, "Margin call," you know, that's okay.
I bring him up only because, and for who, whatever family he's got, whatever friends.
I don't know. I don't know if they're, you know, when he breathes out again and doesn't breathe in again. Yeah, I don't know if they're going to let his wife out of the pit or not. I don't. I hope somebody remembers that she's there.
I wonder if one of his fans, groupies, will be there with a mason jar to capture his last breath, so they can put it, as part of the Rush Limbaugh memorial. Because you know he's going to have a crypt, you know, a fucking
Well, it'll have to be indoors, because otherwise it'll float away from all the people pissing on it.
Yeah, well, I don't think that mind that thought didn't cross my mind. There are very few things I will risk arrest for, but pissing on
it's all a vast conspiracy, Scott, because that's why the whole sexual sex offender registry was developed, was so that when Rush Limbaugh died, all the people who pissed on his grave could be charged, because if public exposure falls under that rubric. And so that's what's supposed to keep people from pissing on Ronald Reagan's grave, Rush Limbaugh's grave, you know, because if you get caught, you have to be on the sex offender registry.
Not me. You know, I plan ahead. I preload the mason jar.
Oh, well, sure now. Oh, aren't you clever?
I make sure the top is screwed on with that little rubber gasket or whatever. And not until I get there do I pop the top. And I can. No, I don't need my get out of jail free card. Or
you know what? I don't think you've found a new friend to replace Chirps in your heart. But if you had one of those plastic jugs full of Tidy that was you'd emptied out of Tidy Cat's litter, you could just fill
I may
that.
Have one.
You could just fill that thing over time. Because that's about the size of a water can on the back of a World War II fucking Jeep.
Yes, indeed. But that may be more piss than Rush deserves.
I don't know if that can be calculated by science, really.
I don't want to make a speech. I just want to make a statement and send him off into the next world.
Floating.
With a dab behind each ear, you know? Just and wave to him. Bye, Rush.
I was trying not to be an asshole, and you've made me be one. But
what'd I do? I didn't do it.
No, you just. I said I was going to try not to be an asshole about it, and then you know, the conversation just proceeded, okay. And there I went.
Anyway, for those who missed the name of the series, and I'm sure there are some, go on YouTube and. Can't Get You Out of My Head, Adam Curtis. Curtis.
And apparently, Ralph, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department, says that critics praise new docuseries as dazzling but incoherent.
Well, and I figured that's why a lot of us in this family would enjoy it. Because sometimes... I know.
Kind of sounds like a Pink Floyd record played at the wrong speed. Can you imagine? Can you imagine that heartbeat at the beginning of Dark Side of the Moon played at 45? That's tachycardia, motherfucker.
Yeah, quick, grab the pedals. Anyway, I've got to get my. I'm getting better with my sleep, getting up at a reasonable time, but since I was up late last night watching. This marathon, I may be back in the old, what day is it? What year is it? Now, it is Tuesday, isn't it?
It is, at least here.
See, that's what fucks me up about the Monday holidays. If the mailman doesn't...
Right, so I don't take Monday holidays usually, so that keeps things pretty well in order. Now, granted, Christmas and New Year's screwed me up.
Well, they do me every year. It doesn't matter what day of the week either of them falls on. I'm not right for the third until the third week of January. I'm not right. I woke up today thinking Meet the Press was going to be on. I thought yesterday was Saturday.
You know, I can honestly say I have never awakened on any morning thinking, "Hey, Meet the Press is going to be on."
Well, I watch it only to see how the standards of NBC have fallen over the years. I remember when that was an actual news and public affairs program back in the days of Lawrence A. Spivak.
Yes.
You know?
That's the guy I was trying to remember, because I quit paying attention back when Tim Russert got the job.
Yeah.
And then the game was really over when Disco Dave came along.
Oh, David Gregory?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Where is he now? Whatever happened to... And where the hell is Chris Matthews? He's got to land somewhere.
No, he doesn't. He's unhireable.
Really?
Yeah.
What the hell did he do? I don't even remember what he did.
Creepy perv stuff. You know, creepy white dude perv stuff.
Creepy white dude perv stuff. I'll bet you got a file cabinet in the Horn Mansion back in the office area. And you get to the... to the C's, and you open that drawer and flip back, you know, rummage back to the C's, and there's a file folder. It's this, what did you say? Creepy, dumb white stuff.
Yeah, creepy white guy perv stuff. It's an entire drawer. It's an entire cabinet. There's A and B, and then most of C, entire cabinet, D.
Am I in there? Because God knows I'm...
We have no information at this point.
Oh, well, you've got to get into the big database in the sky, Robin. There's just
don't help. And by the way, you got a thank you note from Matt in San Francisco.
Oh,
thank you, Scott. I will have to stop by the mason jar aisle before heading to Ronnie's resting place. Noted.
I live to serve. You know that.
Well, you know what the old saying is: look for the helpers.
Yes.
That's what Mr. Rogers said. Look for the helpers. You're a helper.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your thighs. That's one that I want on my chiseled into my marble, as it were. Jesus, I'll be all right.
Well, I'm going to wrap up here because it is, let's see, by God, three tanks of gas later, we got it up to 60 degrees in here. Well, wonders never cease. But I got to get the upload done and get out of here because it's getting real cold. This is one of those days where the temperature...
You're a broadcast professional. You've got things to do.
Yeah, right now we are snow showers and 19 degrees Fahrenheit outside. We're looking at 100, yeah, this continues until about midnight and then it just keeps dropping and hey, tomorrow's hot. This is the weird part. It's going to get down to 16 tonight and then tomorrow's high is 36. God, I'm doing the weather again. Jesus Christ. Somebody get me 335 an hour. But tomorrow we go up to 36 and then. But then Friday's going to be so much goddamn fun. The lows.
Just in time for your weekend.
Yep, the lows 12. Hey, just in time for the weekend here. Yeah. Out in the shoals.
Is good.
And the thing is, it's worse in the shoals right now than it is here. My good buddy Stefan posted a pic last night. They are literally iced into the studios.
Oh, man.
And have been like all day yesterday and all day today. It's like martial law down there.
I don't believe I've ever been stranded in a station due to weather. I was always able to leave.
Oh, I have.
You know,
I have. We were stuck at CNN Center during the great ice storm of I think 1987, and. Mm. And Ted Turner put us all up at the Omni Hotel and we didn't
it was right there.
And we were in the same building. Yeah. And we didn't even have to have roommates. So, you know, and then got up the next day and did our, but of course, you know, come on, young journalists, nobody went to sleep.
No, hell no. It's like a field trip.
Oh, it was a grown-up sleepover for underpaid TV and radio journalists.
And it'll be in your book, I'm sure, portions of it, once it's cleared legal, you know.
let's just say room service was very much abused. I want the cheeseburger with the caviar. No, put it on CNN's tab. Really?
And, pardon me, back in those days, you know, he was still there. See, that's what fucked up CNN.
Yeah.
It is when old Ted went away. And to bring it full circle, let's do our own little connections with James Burke thing. When he retired to Montana or Wyoming or wherever the hell he is, he's got the largest bison herd in the known universe, mm-hmm. that Turner does.
And he also has a string of restaurants, or did. I don't know what COVID did to it, but it was Ted's Montana Grill. They were all over. Pretty good food, really. I don't know if it survived, but I feel really bad for him because he has a disease called Lowy body dementia.
Yes, and it's a horror. It's something that you don't want anybody to get.
Not even, well, Rush?
Well, no, he's juggling enough balls. He had to borrow them, of course, but he's juggling them nonetheless.
All right, let me out of here, Scott.
All right, here's the key. You may release yourself, but you must come back tomorrow.
Thank you. I will turn on the ankle monitor presently.
It's in your contract.
It damn sure is. Right. Later. Bye now.
All right, take care. See ya.
And so we close the program with a $50 When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge on the table. Maybe that'll get met after I close the show. Who knows? It would be really great because otherwise tomorrow it's 780, which is scary. Real scary. But hopefully that will not be the case. Thank you, one and all, for being here this evening. I enjoyed being here. I hope you did as well. And thanks to our subscribers, both Patreon and PayPal. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you so very much to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Brand new Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, headon.live. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Stay home if you can. If you have to be out and about, take every precaution possible. Wear your mask, double mask if you have the ability. Wash your hands frequently. Don't touch your face. Wear nitrile gloves if you have them and you can. Use hand sanitizer liberally throughout your journeys. Maintain your social distance 15 feet among people wearing masks and 15 light years between you and someone who doesn't have a mask. And if somebody comes towards you saying, well, you know, if I let you have more than one mask a day, then I won't have an entire warehouse full of masks. Avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Later.